gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Every morning of the week, Steffi Claus brings truth and wisdom and facts to all the good little sexy liberals. But even Steffi Claus can get felled by a bug, and that's why you're stuck with me today. Greetings, people of Earth. This is John Fugelsang, filling in for Stephanie Miller all 3 hours this morning and taking your calls on everything at 1-800-STEPH-12. I am calling you from New York. However, the heroic Steph crew remains intact in the Burbank Megaplex. Please give it up for the luminous Jackie Schechner, the brilliant Chris LaVoy, and the ever-punctual Jim Ward.
Good morning, John. Thank you for doing this at such last minute.
Such a pleasure to be here with you, Chris. I feel like I barely got to talk to you guys at all last week, so now I'll overcompensate today.
It was great to see you last weekend in D.C.
Yeah. It was a wonderful, wonderful time. I had a great time. It was great to get you guys on stage. For those of you who didn't know, at the Sexy Liberal Show, we finally did our first show in D.C.
Yep.
I think we're scheduled to do about 7 more in D.C. before the end of the year.
and we
were gifted by having the triumvirate of hipness you can see on current TV, even still. Chris, Jim, and Jackie opened the show and went on stage, and it was so much fun. You guys really were a riot.
We got to do a skit.
Yes,
we did a skit. Yeah.
Jim wrote a skit for us.
Do you want to share with the class what your skit was?
I don't remember.
Oh, you know what it was? It was a takeoff on those commercials where the guy says, you too, for the cost of a cup of coffee, can help this poor child.
Right. Instead of actually giving him a sandwich or some medicine or water, he's hitting us up for money. You know?
Yeah.
Right. So I found that. You think,
could you just lean over and help the kid? That would be. You and your crew out there filming the commercial.
Yeah. Put the camera down and help
good.
Them.
But anyway, it was
a riot.
It was to buy Tom Brokaw on an L, wasn't it?
Yes,
or something like that?
Right. It was, yes. Tom Brokaw was hosting this thing. It was a sort of trying to help the Republicans, get over their crushing defeat.
We do want to help them get over their crushing defeat, especially since Paul Ryan now thinks that Obama's plan is conquest, political conquest.
Right.
It's sort of like, actually, Paul, that was his plan up until November. That's achieved. Now they're just going to flatten you. Now they're just going to undo 30 years of Reagan's agenda, we hope.
But I'm right. Serious. I'm a serious guy. I get premium support.
He actually brought a chart. I loved it. It's like, that's a way to win the Tea Party back after voting for taxes on the wealthy. Bring a chart. That worked for Ross Perot. It'll work for you.
Now, here's the thing. It's like,
and we're also extremely lucky because John McCain made a rare Sunday morning talk show appearance this past weekend.
Oh, yeah.
For those
so
of you who
rare.
Don't know, John McCain has in his house, he sleeps in the attic, and he has a pole to slide down and a red phone in case a Sunday morning show calls. And so every week the pole gets a ride. But he's there, and we're going to be playing some clips from him. And, of course, today we have to have a bit of a funeral for Sarah Palin on Fox News.
I don't know, though. I mean, I'd love to think that we've seen the last of her, but I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
Many people don't think so.
We've got some speculation coming out that she may pop up on another network.
I would bet cash money her people are calling Mr. Zucker all weekend.
Yeah. Well, she did make a comment on her interview with Breitbart where she said we shouldn't just be speaking to the choir, preaching to the choir. Conservatives need to branch out, which is funny because she did it on Breitbart.
Right.
But
yeah.
It seems to be setting her up, she's setting herself up to reach out to a larger audience without getting chastised for it.
Yeah.
I think you're right. I do think you're right. And I think that that's why. But also, when someone burns their bridges at Fox, they have to make nice. Let's not forget, Newt Gingrich is like playing kissy face with Chris Matthews and Soledad O'Brien every chance he gets.
Yeah.
Because
when
Newt went on the air and actually slammed when Newt Gingrich, Fox News paid contributor, took a leave of absence, which Sarah Palin never did. That's how a year ago we all knew she wasn't running for president. Mm-hmm. But when Newt went on those debates, the 700 debates last year, and slammed Fox News,
that's right.
Like, someone doesn't want his locker back at Camp Roger Ailes.
Well, $10 says that Sarah Palin doesn't land at Current.
I think you're right. Nor at Al Jazeera.
Yeah.
Al Jazeera America, right.
Al Jazeera will be a legitimate news organization. However, we should give Sarah Palin some credit because it's not easy to raise the IQ of Fox by 50 points in one day, and she managed to do it. So there is that. And we will miss her. We will really, really miss her because she's given us so much of...
From a comedic perspective, not from an intellectual perspective.
But you know what? Honestly, she stopped being funny. As soon as she wasn't running for president, it was over. I think if she'd run for president, if she'd filled the Bachman slot, she could have kept her brand going.
morning, she would have at least had, you know, gotten the chance to go out there and circulate her talking points. She would have done what everyone who ran for president on the GOP side, except for Mitt Romney and Rick Perry, did, which was line up more public speaking gigs. Yeah. That's the only reason anyone runs for president on the GOP side. And I think that she'd still be a little bit culturally relevant, because the only people who still know she exists are people who watch Hannity every night. And that's a median age of 72, I believe.
You're right. You're absolutely right.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what? Rocky Mountain Mike has put together a little bit of a tribute to Sarah Palin.
You don't say.
Also, too, you betcha.
Let's take a listen.
Had wild gooses. She shot at by the score. All from the inside of a helicopter door. Ooh, what a hockey mom she was. Ooh, what a hockey mom. She was.
A whole chorus behind them.
Yeah.
Wow.
White folks, teabaggers, were hoping that she'd run. They know that Obama is taking away all their guns.
That's not actually true.
Ooh, what a hockey mom she was. What a hockey mom she was.
All right.
Wow.
Rocky Mountain
wow.
Mike.
Wow, very nice. Rocky Mountain Mike. Check out the big brain on that man.
I got to meet him in person for the first time in D.C.
He was at D.C. Sexy Liberal, yes.
Isn't he a terrific guy?
Yeah, he is terrific.
That's the best thing about Stephanie's show is all the really talented people around the country that you guys exploit for their talent. I got to say, because Rocky Mountain Mike is such an art. And I had the pleasure of meeting one of his collaborators this weekend, Audra, who I believe is the woman who did the vocals for the Old Finger. The Jan Brewer parody?
Oh, yeah.
Bonefinger.
Bonefinger.
Same thing.
Which is his brilliant, brilliant parody of Jan Brewer to Goldfinger. That's a mean Shirley Bassey. And I got to actually meet her at the Blue State Ball in Minneapolis, which I want to give a little shout-out to, because I got to tell you something. This is the kind of event that more progressive radio stations and just, you know, sane people in general should put on. Do you know what it is, Chris? You know what the Blue State Ball is, right?
Yeah, it's something that KTNF in Minneapolis puts on every year.
AM 950, and with the most spectacular progressive talk station, one of the best,
yes.
Along with everyone that carries the Stephanie Miller Show.
Janet Robert is the awesome general manager over there.
Indeed she is, and a fine general manager. And they do this big event every year, and so I went and played there last year, and they asked me to come and headline it and do some stand-up this year, and it was just amazing. Ed Schultz opened the show with about half an hour address to the troops, and Tom Hartman was there, Norman Goldman was there, the governor of Minnesota was there.
Wow.
Congressman Keith Ellison was there. Last year, Bill Press was there, and it was a lot of... Stephanie's played there before, too, and it was really an honor to go and meet all these cool, sexy liberals out there in Minneapolis who are demanding more shows, Stephanie, I'm just telling you now. And really a great time to go tell filibuster jokes.
Awesome. Sounds like a great time was had by all.
Well, it's just like, here's the thing. The one thing conservatives have realized that liberals haven't is that, you know, they're organized. They're together.
Yeah.
And they are really, really all set. You know, they have their community, and progressives, we're too busy fighting over, you know, who's got the best gun control policy.
No, we're
so
not.
It's like,
shut up.
It's always a pleasure to do events when liberals get their act together and are organized. And, man, it was just so great to be in a room full of people doing the Lord's work.
Yep.
Sort of like this one. So I'd have to ask you guys, who watched the joint interview last night with Barack Obama and Secretary Hillary Clinton?
Any I DVR'd it, and then I watched some of it this morning.
You people are all on the West Coast. I can't, but what do you have, lives? You going out on a Sunday?
We're going to sleep.
Yeah, we get up, you know, at stupid o'clock.
Nah, that's true.
This
beauty rest
thing doesn't happen without the rest part.
No. Fortunately, I'm not on camera. Were you like me? Like halfway through, did you just be like, OMG, they totally did it? Like it was the most kissy face love fest I've ever seen. I don't really understand why they actually did this. It was fascinating. They were both articulate and lovely, and Hillary spoke really candidly about her disappointment of losing the campaign, but growing to respect this president.
I think it was so that President Obama could endorse Hillary to run for president.
president in 2016.
I thought the same thing.
Yeah. It's sad, though, because Joe Biden's the big loser in all of this, and he's been such an effective vice president, and he's been a real partner.
Yeah.
And I think that if he comes out and endorses Hillary now and over the course of the next 4 years, where does that put Biden?
First off, I don't think Joe Biden's going to run. He will be 74 at the time, and I think that the president would have the good taste to not endorse either one of them until the nomination process. Let's not forget, back in 1988, when Reagan was president and George H.W. Bush was running, and so was Pat Robertson, President Reagan didn't endorse his own vice president until Pat Robertson had dropped out of the race.
Okay.
That's true.
I think you'll see
the president having, not so grotesque a courtesy, but actually being courteous to both. But I don't think Joe Biden's going to run.
You don't think so, really?
I don't think so.
I don't think he will.
What's next for him, then?
He's going to be 74, whatever he wants. I hope he gets, his own show on Fox.
I think he's going to be a wonderful statesman like Jimmy Carter was.
I think so, too.
Not a bad idea.
Yeah.
He's going to be very useful. He'll do public speaking. He'll be an author. Yep. He'll do whatever he wants. But he's such a powerful advocate for progressive causes.
Mm-hmm.
And to be honest, it's great that everyone's already putting a laurel wreath around Hillary's head. But I'd kind of like to see a real progressive challenger. I think that'd be very good for the party and very good for her candidacy. I think Dennis Kucinich kept a lot of these Democrats really honest when they were running in 2008 and 2004.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't be brokenhearted if, say, Elizabeth Warren ran against Hillary. I think that if the Democrats just go ahead and give it to her, then that's going to be really kind of a drag and disappointing, and I hope it's a bit more interesting.
Yep, I do too. All right, it's time to take a break, so let's do that now.
All right, when we come back, though, I want to play some sound bites from this thing last night, because at parts of it, it was kind of like, it reminded me of Katie Holmes being told, okay, Katie, thank you for your 5-year contract, here's your check. And so I think a lot of it was a good reward, and we'll talk all about it. Plus, the new immigration deal, the filibuster, and a hybrid car that runs on air. Good God, it's a Stephanie Miller show.
Fresh Republican outrage. You keep listening, she'll make more. It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller.
This is the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm John Fuglesang, filling in for Stephanie because she be illin. Happy to be here with you. We are at 1-800. Yes, I went all the way back to Run DMC 1986 for that.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. Uh-huh. And you know what? I have my Adidas on, actually.
Wow. That's fantastic.
All right, we're getting way too retro.
That was the dawn of materialism and hip-hop when Run DMC did my Adidas, I gotta say.
They really
owned it. And we're taking your calls all morning at 800-STEP-1-2. Of course, the great Jackie Schechner and Crystal Boy. Who's sneak? Oh, you really did just flash your Adidas. I'm watching you on TV.
I did, yes. I have my Adidas on.
Let me explain for those of you in radio land what's going on here. Stephanie's out. I'm in New York filling in from the Boo Radley studio. And so Jackie, Chris, and Jim are in L.A., and I still have Current TV on DirecTV here in the studio at Dial Global. So I'm watching all y'all, and fortunately you can't see me because I look like the Crypt Keeper.
Because I
was saying before we started, because John Fuglesang's looks are his real liability.
Yeah, that's right.
You're fun. No, actually, I haven't slept in like 6 months because now I have this horrible baby I live with, and they're horrible people. I gotta say, babies, they're terrible. They're terrible Americans. They really, really are. They're just
so selfish.
They just take and take.
Smack you and punch you and poke you and crap on you, and they will exploit you, and they will take advantage of your. And you forgive them because you think that's babies are Chris Brown is what I'm trying to say.
Chris Brown is in a little trouble overnight.
Another Chris Brown debacle.
Yeah, apparently he jumped Frank Ocean.
Oh, he did?
Yes.
Not to be confused with jumping the shark.
Right. He jumped Frank Ocean in a recording studio parking lot here in Hollywood last
night.
Wow,
Frank Ocean's not a girl. He could kick Chris Brown's butt. I don't know what that's about.
Apparently Frank Ocean parked in Chris Brown's parking space or something.
Oh, and, come on.
Yeah.
Is that what they're calling it now?
Oh, God.
Wow, I thought after Drake, Chris Brown learned to not get in fights with boys anymore.
So that happened.
It's great. I can't wait till Chris Brown gets out of prison and writes his tell-all book. Yeah, seriously. It's like, look, and you know what? I get a lot of crap on Twitter for the Chris Brown jokes, but you know what? With this guy has no humility. He choked and beat up a woman, and I don't care if she goes back to him or not. He still deserves to be passed around his cell block like a blunt at the Source Awards. Yes, he does. And we had a Republican on the line, but yeah. I want to go to Keith in Texas, who is calling about, I think immigration is going to be the big story of the week, but Keith's calling in to talk about what I think might really be the story that affects our lives the most. Good morning, Keith. You're on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Hey, thank you, John. This is pretty neat being able to talk coast to coast here.
Isn't it though? We're bi-coastal. Good morning.
Yes, how about that? Well, I'm off the subject, I understand, but back when I was in high school, gerrymandering was a dirty word.
That's right.
It was illegal.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Johnson thought, hey, neat idea. So that we can have minority representation, let's make gerrymandering legal in the 65 Voters' Rights Act.
How
so? Guess who's kicking us in the teeth with it now?
Oh, I see. So you're saying that Lyndon Johnson started all this to help minorities, and now it's being used by the
right.
GOP to hurt minorities at the ballot box.
That's right.
Right.
I think you're onto something, Keith.
Hmm.
I think so we've got to be careful what we put into laws, because Republicans know how to kick us in the teeth with it, you know?
Well, that's interesting. I have to look up in the history of that. But, wow. Well, you know, LBJ, I mean, many people say he was the last great liberal, but I guess we, as long as we blame him for stuff, that's great. I don't know what to say. I mean, were you appalled by what happened in Virginia last week?
Yes, absolutely. They did it while the president was being inaugurated, yep. and was the only time that they could have a 2019 vote.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And mm-hmm. they did it because of a civil rights veteran in the Virginia legislature who went to D.C. And my question, and I didn't hear anyone in the media address this, even when the Republican governor of the state said it was wrong, how were they able to do this on Martin Luther King Day? It was a holiday. Weren't they closed?
You would think.
Yeah, there really hasn't been any conversation about how procedurally they actually were able to get that done.
And many
why
think
it
was
a working holiday, yeah.
And many think it wasn't legal, too. It's going to be challenged in the courts because it was just so shady. And well, it might be because Virginia doesn't really take Dr. King's birthday as a holiday very seriously. I don't know if you all know this, but I spent a lot of time there. My mom's from Virginia. I have a lot of family there. And
I'm from Virginia.
Oh, okay, then you know. It's not Dr. King Day.
It's Robert E. Lee Day.
It's Jackson,
it? Wow.
It's Jackson Lee King Day.
Yeah.
They honor two Confederate generals and this other fella.
Yeah.
Wow.
Stay classy.
Cognitive dissonance. Might
yeah, exactly.
I hear that some Republicans are backing away from it, though.
Yeah.
They're getting a little antsy.
And legislation has been passed on holidays before. There's no law saying you can't pass legislation on holidays.
I guess you're right.
You
but
know?
Still, it's just shady. I don't know. To me, it just seems like...
It's totally shady. I'm not disagreeing with you there.
But on a federal holiday, they're able to do that?
Yeah.
See, I don't know. I'm slow on these things. But it was really, really disgusting, and I don't think it's going to hold up in court. But this is the problem facing our Republican friends. And we had a Republican on hold who I understand dropped.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry he did, because I really think the thing is, they're not winning elections. And when they're not winning elections, what are they going to do? Well, they're either going to try to reach out to voters by having more progressive policies, or they're going to try and cheat. And it looks like they're really going hard for the cheating.
They are.
And, you know, Bobby Jindal, of course, and we're going to be talking to Ruth Pundit in a minute, he went before the RNC last week, had a very blunt message for his fellow conservatives.
The
he said,
party.
We've got to stop being the stupid party. We had a number of Republicans damage the brand this year with offensive and bizarre comments, and I'm here to say we've had enough of that. Well, you're right, Jackie. However, is Bobby Jindal the messenger for that? I mean, when he – because he's saying we had the offensive and bizarre comments. He's talking about Murdoch. He's talking about Aiken, right, the guys who were opposed to abortion even in cases of rape or incest. Guess where Bobby Jindal stands on that issue?
Yeah, exactly where they are. Yeah.
Like, so he's more or less saying it's okay to have these views. Just don't say them out loud, right? Because
Which doesn't serve the Republican Party very well.
It doesn't. And Bobby Jindal calling the rest of them stupid, he once wrote in the Oxford Review about how he participated in a friend's exorcism back in college.
He did?
Yeah. He was opposed to TARP and took big, giant checks anyway. And he's against flag burning, but he wants to get rid of the Fairness Doctrine because that opposes on free speech.
Oh, I didn't say he wasn't hypocritical. I just said good for him for calling them stupid.
You're right. He might be qualified to run the stupid party.
Yeah.
We'll be talking about it with Ruth Pundit when we come back. It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Sorry if it seemed forward, but I had to give that
Stephanie Miller
to test drive. And let me say, wow.
This is the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm John Fugelsang, filling in for Steph, who is tragically not feeling too well today, but I'm happy to be here with you.
Well, you think she had some day-old sushi or something.
Is that what it was?
Well, they say food poisoning.
Yeah.
Really? Jim, did you deliver some tainted shellfish to her house again?
No, but Travis and I were there Saturday night, and we're claiming innocence. As far as you know, I ended up in the big chair by accident.
Oh my.
It's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Well, I hope Steph is on the mend and feels better, and I'm glad she's getting some rest. I got to say, guys, I told you this last week, but the show we did in D.C., I was sitting in the audience for her set because I was helping the audio guy run cues, and I really have never seen her give a better set. She was so tight and so funny.
Yep.
And when she brought that man up out of the audience and held him in her arms for three solid minutes talking with him, and it was very disturbing, and I still am sore from laughing. It was more or less, Steph is legally married to this guy in Guam after the show the other night.
I think you're right.
Yeah, and one of the reasons why I guess I'm most happy to be here is that it's, you know, I'm grateful to be around the smart people like Jackie and Jim and Chris. And for the occasional brilliant guest that you guys can coerce into calling in, and oh my, who would it be this morning?
Lee Papa, the rude pundit. Pundit.
Good morning, Rude.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, how's it going, Lee?
Hi. Hello, surprise, John.
Thank you. Well, Stephanie's
just... That just sounded like I'm a hooker and you're just some guy that jumped out of the alley.
Yes, I am. I am named after a guy who pays call girls. That's true. But but Lee, I want to let you know, Stephanie's not here. She's just so distraught she won't be able to see Sarah Palin shucking and jiving on Fox News anymore.
I know. Doesn't that make us all a little sad? It really sort of cuts down on the number of stomach pills that I have to take.
The number of bromides.
Yes, the number of new screens I have to get from throwing things at them.
I don't know what's going to happen now. Where will Sean Hannity insert his nose? I don't understand what's going to happen for the future of the show.
I love how optimistic you are about what he's inserting, but...
just his nose, trust me. I've watched their appearances many times. You know, Lee, Sarah Palin spent more time as a Fox News part-time contributor than she did as a full-time governor of Alaska. Did you know that?
Wow. And apparently just as effective.
Yes.
Well, and she did quit this job, although it seems like Roger Ailes gave her the out to let her quit by offering her like apparently half of her salary. So at least she got to say, I quit this place, and she wasn't fired.
Right, right. He let her walk out of there with whatever she considers dignity. So, I just love that it was probably, oh, you know what, we'll pay you minimum wage, and I don't know, you can go hit up the snack bar.
But we were talking before the break, Lee. I remember in your wonderful book, The Rude Pundit Almanac, that everyone should check out, you talked about, you know, her as a potential 2012 presidential candidate, and then, of course, she didn't run. It was a horrible blow to comedians everywhere, and I bet today, Rude, that she's wishing she had. Because if she had run it, she would have expanded her brand in a way that Fox News and a canceled reality show never could have done it.
And that was exactly what I said in the book, which is that if she wants to keep the Sarah Palin brand or Sarah Co. going, she's got to run for president. Because otherwise, who cares? I mean, she wasn't on the national stage long enough. And frankly, with, you know, Fox's dying audience.
Yeah,
all of the shut-ins and elderly that are watching them, that it's that of course she was going to fade. And
I think you're right.
I mean, right now she's essentially a Facebook celebrity.
Yeah, well, and even the New York Times rather pointedly mentioned how even though she left Fox, she was still sending out messages on Facebook.
Yeah, so basically she's the Tila Tequila of punditry.
Right, or you know, right now she's a an inarticulate tree falling in the forest.
Well, I mean, what do you think she to you betcha? What do you think she can contribute, Rude? Do you think we're not going to see her ever run for national office again?
Oh no, we're never going to really see her anymore. She's going to be a fringe leader, the sad part is that she's going to be increasingly dwindling, and I think at some point we'll see her on Dancing with the Stars.
Well, I think you're right. And, you know, I used to joke that she's going to be the first major party ticket candidate to one day host a cosmetics infomercial. But now I think there's one step closer. And as her fan base dwindles, do you think, Rude, that it will become ever more right-wing, that for her to stay relevant, she's going to have to go more and more to the right, a la Santorum and Gingrich, to have, like, a very loud minority following her.
Oh, I think so. I mean, she had inklings of that all along. I mean, the way in which she threw around the word socialist, you know, she was trying to appeal to a far-right group of people that are just simply waiting for her dog whistle.
Yeah, I think you're right. And it's sad because I think she could have really offered something. I mean, she wasn't, you know, the worst governor Alaska ever had, and she did raise taxes, and she did, you know, regulate the oil companies, and I think that she could have been interesting if she decided to be. It just apparently looks like she wanted to be a celebrity.
Yeah. Right. Well, that's the thing, is that was the calculation in even accepting the VP spot with McCain, was, okay, what is this going to do for Sarah? It wasn't, what is this going to do for the country? What is this going to do for Alaska? It made Alaska into something of a laughingstock for electing her, when you're right, she actually, you know, I threw out there that she wasn't an effective governor. No, she wasn't a good governor, but she actually did do some things, like you said. She did raise taxes, which is something that everybody always forgot about when she was running and talking about, you know, the taxes being too high.
So she's the thinking man's Michelle Bachmann is what we're...
Oh, wow. That's painful.
That made my brain hurt.
Yeah, that creates some kind of vortex in space and time.
Well, I think we've given her more time than she deserves. However, I will tell everyone that read Rude's book, because he has some hilarious commentary on her. And on Alternet, there's the 10 nastiest things Sarah Palin said in her 3 years on Fox. And it's pretty hilarious. Calling for a Chick-fil-A boycott has a chilling effect on our First Amendment rights. It's just kind of,
what?
You know. Oh, yeah, the stuff she said.
Wait a minute, those are our First Amendment rights.
Exactly. Well,
you know,
she said
the
stimulus didn't stimulate anything. It's just everything she's been wrong about on Fox News in the past 10 years.
I was driving, speaking of people being wrong, I was in Pennsylvania last week, and I drove through and I saw a sign that said, if you're going to vote for a socialist, get out of my damn country. And I just thought, you don't really understand what voting is about, do you?
Wow. No, if you don't like socialism, then you don't ever say anything nice about your libraries, roads, streetlights, or army.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
Well, I want to move a little closer to home and talk about a great column you wrote, Rude. Something that kind of shocked me in the great state of Tennessee with a courthouse. Now, I thought they couldn't really top fighting to put 10 commandments in courthouses, because having a place where you administer the death penalty and putting up thou shalt not kill is pretty funny. But please tell us about what's going on in Cookeville, Tennessee.
Yeah, in Cookeville, Tennessee, they decided that a pastor there, a Southern Baptist pastor, decided that what was missing from the Putnam County Courthouse were the words, "In God We Trust." Now, okay, fine. In God We Trust. It's on the money. It is essentially the motto of, it is the motto of the United States, because Eisenhower got that passed in 1956.
Right. Yeah, so it's not the conservative point of view. That conservative point of view would be a separation of church and state as the founders intended. But
right.
The late 20th century point of view is putting "In God We Trust" on everything.
Right. And so what they did was they raised money to put "In God We Trust" in 2-foot-tall gold letters, not just on the front of the courthouse, but on all four sides above every entrance. So that no matter where you walk into the courthouse, you see "In God We Trust."
Yeah, that's very Donald Trump of them.
I just want to know, you know, what's wrong with God's ego? That he just needs to know that whatever side he's on.
Mm-hmm. I think, well, again, it's not about God. You know, this isn't about Christianity either. It's about what? Christian supremacy. You know, putting the word God in giant gold letters all over a courthouse building is not about your devotion and faith. Jesus lines out in Matthew 6:5, you're supposed to pray in private and be humble about it.
Right.
This is about saying, we're Christian folk here, and if you're not, bugger off.
Well, I mean, you know, and it's not that far from Murfreesboro, Tennessee. I mean, it's about an hour and a half from Murfreesboro, Tennessee, where there was a bit of an uproar over a mosque being built a year or two ago. And but the people of a town nearby, Allgood, Tennessee, thought that it looked so good that now they want to put it on their city hall.
Really?
Oh, yeah. So, and this is not to mention, by the way, this is not to mention in Cookeville, which I actually have friends there who brought this to my attention. When you drive to Cookeville, there is a giant cross that is right next to the highway. That's not on a church or anything like that. Somebody just funded, let's put a giant cross so that when you come into Cookeville, you see it. And it's lit up every night.
Oh God!
Yeah, and this is not to mention that when you're just a little east of Cookeville, the giant Confederate flag right next to the highway.
Oh really?
Oh yeah, yeah. Somebody flying on the property right there. Huge Confederate flag. You can see it forever.
Oh, and cool. You know, nothing says Christianity or patriotism like quitting America because you want to keep other human beings as livestock and pets, doesn't it? I mean, really.
Who would Jesus lynch?
Flying the flag of an enemy nation is just the best way to show how patriotic you are.
Oh, that'd be great if you put, like, the rising sun next to it, you know? Like, you know, let's put the ball up there. Put the
Kaiser
or something.
Hey Rood, shifting gears a bit, I want to get your thoughts on the Benghazi hearings last week, because I know you've written about it, and for me, watching it, it was sort of like watching the Benghazi hearings and then how the right-wing media covered Secretary Clinton afterwards. It was kind of like, come for the hypocrisy, stay for the misogyny. You know, from Rand Paul and these guys being complete hypocrites compared to how Bush reacted after a terrorist attack and how they're reacting now, to seeing Sean Hannity say Hillary unglued and this cover of the New York Post implying that she drives Bill Clinton into other women's arms. I mean, the sexism was just insane. How did you feel watching that?
Well, I thought at least they weren't talking about her bangs. But no, I felt the same way. I thought, wow, especially when she had that moment of getting angry and upset, I thought they're just going to turn that into, my God, isn't she so bitchy? And you know, of course, we don't want a woman to behave like this. Whereas, you know, and then they accused her of being disingenuous when she was giving her opening statement, she choked up talking about the families of the people who had died. Mm-hmm. So what do you want? What does she have to do to demonstrate that she has real emotions that matter, that don't matter in relation to how they make the men feel,
exactly,
but how they matter as a human being?
Yeah.
And also in response to what was a kind of, you know, for lack of a better word, the bullying questions, you know, that they kept asking the same thing, even though that she simply didn't have an answer, or mm-hmm. that it was just crap they were making up, like Rand Paul with the turkey thing, the moment when it was turkey. What are you talking about?
Well, and in fairness to the secretary, she can handle tough questions, and four Americans are dead, so there should be tough questioning. It would have been nice if Republicans asked tough questions when people were killed in our embassies under President Bush.
Yeah.
It was never a priority for them back then. Likewise, to see about how you know, when George Bush, they're saying Barack Obama didn't act quickly enough. You know, remember when George Bush was sitting numbly in a classroom as we were under attack, and they're acting like, you know, that's like John Wayne freebasing a low testosterone drug? I mean, you know, these guys have the attention span of the guy from Memento.
Oh, and I loved you know, the ultimate projection was when they were talking about to Hillary, like, you had a memo that or an email that said something about that we might get attacked. And I thought, really, guys? Are you really going to go there? Is there no self-awareness here at all?
Yeah.
Is there no, you know, sort of great god of irony that can come down at that moment and just hit you with lightning bolts?
Condoleezza Rice got a memo, and they promoted her. Rood Pundit, it's such a pleasure to have you call in. Anytime I get to be on the air with you is a lot of fun. And everyone read the Rood Pundit's blog at roodpundit.blogspot.com.
You take care, John.
Peace.
Thanks Rood.
Thank you.
Bye.
And we'll be back. I want to play some cuts in that Obama-Hillary love fest last night, because it was pretty interesting, and I want to get the listeners' thoughts at 1-800-STEPH-12. It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Red, white, and Steph. It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller.
Isn't that ironic? No, not really.
No, not really.
This album is 18 years old this year, I believe.
Wow.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm John Fugelsang, filling in for Steph, along with the great Jackie Schechner and Jim Ward.
There's also another little fact that'll make you feel old. The Simpsons monorail episode aired 20 years ago this year.
Wow.
You know, the famous monorail episode.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Great. Wow. 20 years ago, the movie that up for Best Picture was Malcolm X, and, well, that was not for Best Picture, but Unforgiven and Scent of a Woman.
Huh.
So, yeah, time flies when you're following politics.
When you're old.
I just had a conversation yesterday with a girlfriend of mine I've known since we were six, and her daughter's turning six.
Oh.
And she just said to me, do you realize we've known each other that long? And I hung up.
You know, I don't buy that getting older stuff. I believe you either get older or you get better. We're all given the option. And some of the youngest people I've known have been old people who just, like, have figured it out that life's a gift and you're supposed to be happy. And then I've known, like, you know, 29-year-olds who say, oh, we're old now. And if you think you're old, it's done, man. It's done.
Yeah.
So there
well,
you go.
I'm dead then.
Jim, you're one of the funniest guys I know. You keep people young every day. So there.
So
that's
I get
all the positivity I have
them.
In me.
Yes. Okay.
Well, this is we're taking your calls at 1-800-STEPH-12.
I'm the painting
on.
In the attic.
Yes, Jeff. You, Jim. But you look. I think seriously, Jim. You are so energetic. You are so funny. You are so alive. You have such a glow. You are so witty. I think you look really, really great for a man of 70. And
yes.
I mean that. I gotta say, for a 70-year-old, you look much better than Sting. Sherry is calling us from Louisiana about her great governor, Bobby Jindal. Good morning, Sherry. You're on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Good morning, y'all.
How you doing?
Good. Everybody talks about what Bobby Jindal says, but I want to take a few minutes to talk about what he's doing down here.
Okay. How about how about a minute?
Okay. He's closed food stamp offices all across the state to where people have to go 100 miles or more to go to a food stamp office to get food stamps. He has bankrupted public free hospitals that have been open since before the Civil War.
Wow. That's because he's Christian.
He has decided that to let the local governments, which our parish sent out ballots to the people who have kids in school, to decide and who gets fired, whether we want music or whether we want art or whether we want PE.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of having his own balls to make those darn decisions,
amen.
He sends it out to us and says, here, fire your kid's favorite teacher because we're not going to pay her anymore.
Wow. Testify.
Sounds like he is the stupid party.
Yeah.
Can I also say that since you're on education, can I just slip in that he proposed the education cuts while signing the Louisiana Academic Freedom Act, which lets public school teachers discuss creationism in science class?
Oh, amen. Amen. Mm-hmm. Oh, don't even
and he
get
doesn't
me
like he doesn't want the party to be stupid.
Right.
Herp derp.
Herp derp.
Yes, sir. And we just had on the ballot. We had like 7 or 8 amendments, and on the ballot was on there to carry a gun anywhere.
Yep.
Like at my daughter's PTA meeting, we got people packing in the back. I mean, why do you need a gun in a school? Explain that to me. I mean,
all the socialism. There's a lot of socialism in public schools. You got to be careful. It might catch.
And all the churches this week have on their billboards, you know, there were no guns in school when there was prayer in school. Well, I don't know what schools they've been to, but every PTA meeting, we have a prayer. The kids are not allowed to sing pop songs like in their choir. A lot of them are hymns. Oh, well, and I'm sorry that I'm yelling. I'm just worked up.
That's
this
okay.
Morning, y'all. I'm sorry.
Well, and can I say, every time we have a church say that, you know, when there was God in school, there weren't guns in school, that's a really disgusting insult. You know, I mean, we had a shooting in an Amish school a couple of years ago. You know, if you believe God's everywhere, then he's in school, whether you follow the Constitution or not.
Yeah.
And that's people blaming James Madison for school shootings, by the way, because it was his idea to you know it. Can I also point out that he's against, Bobby Jindal's against abortion in cases of rape or incest. He's against embryonic stem cell research. He opposes any kind of gun control, but supports a constitutional amendment banning gay marriage.
Yep.
And he's for a constitutional amendment banning flag burning, but against the fairness doctrine because he thinks that infringes on free speech. And he named himself after the youngest Brady Bunch boy. That's the truth.
That is true.
Oh, wow.
Yes. And he's pro-exorcism.
And he will never, ever, ever be president.
Yep.
So feel good about that. Thank you for your call, Sherry. That was brilliant. Stephanie Miller, we're taking your calls right after the break.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
I'm in trouble with the Chris Brown fans, Chris.
Oh, what'd you do now? Oh, why?
I made a couple of jokes about Chris Brown, and they're coming after me now because
teenage girls.
He's a great guy.
Yeah.
teenage girls. But
Chris Brown's a thug.
Yeah, he is, and he lip syncs while using autotune.
Yeah.
which is really what I'm offended
about. That's a feat.
That's lame.
Yeah. It's the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm John Fugel saying, and Chris Brown will not be defended here.
Nope.
You know, it's just his humility really is what's won me over, you know, because he did choke that woman, but then he made the album about how all these hoes want him, and it just made me like him all over again.
Oh, yeah.
He's just a young guy growing and learning along the way and mm-hmm. choking people and charging admission to watch him mime.
And now beating someone up because he parked in his parking space.
Well, no, I've been told by the Chris Brown fans that actually he parked in Frank Ocean's spot, and Frank walked up to him and, I guess, started the fight.
Hit him with his face. Yeah. Hit his face.
Yes.
Because somebody wants to pick a fight with Chris Brown?
Because
he has
a
penchant for a fight, it seems like.
He likes to get in fights with people.
Exactly.
But, you know, like I said, he's getting in fights with boys now, and that means progress.
Yeah, Frank Ocean doesn't seem like the kind that would just fight someone willy-nilly.
Frank Ocean doesn't seem like the kind of guy who wants to throw his career in the toilet at the moment.
No, he's riding high.
He's having a good year, yeah. So, you know, we'll see. But I guess I don't know. I don't know who was behind it. I look forward to learning all the details because nothing is more interesting to me than the personal beefs of modern R&B stars.
I'll be glued to TMZ all day.
Yeah, we're taking your calls at 1-800-STEPH-12. I know a lot of y'all are on hold, and we are going to get to all of you, I promise. But I'm very happy to welcome our next guest. I've been very pleased to have this man joining me on Viewpoint since I've taken over hosting, and he is one of the brightest thinkers, I think, in politics and analysis. He's a senior fellow at Media Matters. Please welcome Eric Bollard.
Eric Bollard from Media Matters for America, doing the Lord's work as usual.
Eric Bollard. Eric Bollard.
Let's dive into the right-wing world. I don't know what that means. Eric Bollard from Media Matters, whom we love.
Bollard.
Good morning, Eric Bollard.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
Good morning.
Great. Welcome to the Steph Show, Eric. I'm just part of my assault to interview you on as many mediums as possible.
Next up, great podcast.
It's great to have you here. I know you're as broken up about losing Sarah Palin from the Greta Van Susteren show as the rest of us.
You know, it's interesting. It was it's definitely an end of an era. I mean, I think most people expected she wouldn't be back. But, you know, it's interesting. If you go back to, you know, she was hired. January has been an interesting month. January 2009, Glenn Beck's show debuted the week of Obama's inauguration.
It was also the week. The January 2009 was the week that Bill O'Reilly and Sean Hannity were given 4-year deals by Fox.
That's right. That's right. They were re-upping January of 2010. Sarah Palin came aboard Fox with a reportedly, you know, $1 million a year contract to be a pundit. And now here we are in January of 2013. Obama's re-elected easily celebrating, you know, sort of basking in the glow of his second inauguration. And the same week, Sarah Palin and Fox break up after reportedly Fox offered her next to nothing to stay, and she decided to leave. So, you know, in 2010, you know, it looked like Beck and Palin and Fox, you know, with the Tea Party, they really were going to sort of change the face of American politics. But fast
they did.
Years, they did temporarily. And
they marginalized the whole brand.
And fast forward 3 years, you know, Beck is gone, Obama wins easily, and now Palin's gone, and the whole thing sort of imploded, as it had to, because it was so reckless and it was so sort of radically hateful. You know, Beck with his conspiracies and Palin with her nonstop sense of victimization and things like that. So it's worth noting this is sort of at the end of an era. Fox itself, still very much lost in conspiracies, still very, very, very much lost in a sense of self-pity, particularly with Obama's inauguration. But it's not what Roger Ailes thought he was going to build. That's not what they have anymore.
Do you think, this is my last question about Palin, I want to move on to talking about Fox News and their outrage model on a grander scale, but do you think that Ailes did this to give Palin an out so she could say she quit? Was it an insult to offer her so little money, or was he doing her a favor?
No, I think it was an insult. My guess is they felt like they had to offer something. There was some negotiation. You know, it sounds like she had been making $1 million, and it sounds like they offered her, you know, maybe a tenth of that. It would have been insulting, I think. You know, if she had taken it, of course, you know, the way Fox News works, they play hardball. That would have leaked, and everyone would have known.
You're right.
She came back for a tenth or whatever, and it would have been, you know, in that business, it would have been kind of humiliating. You know, the point of no return for her was the blood libel, which was also January of 11. She seemed to have no idea what blood libel meant, the anti-Semitic implications of it. She refused to apologize, and that was basically the end of her pundit career, I think.
After having a rifle scope on Gabby Gifford's district herself.
Yeah.
And you know, Eric, Jackie Schechner just pointed out that Fox apparently paid Sarah Palin, if you factor it out by the word during her time there, how much did she make, Jackie?
It was $15 per word, almost $16 per word. It's from the University of Minnesota Humphrey School of Public Affairs,
wow.
Our Smart Politics blog. They figured out, that she spoke more than 189,000 words over 150 appearances. They did the math. It comes out to about $15.85 per word. It doesn't say how many coherent words.
Yeah, right.
How many of those words made up an actual sentence.
Does this mean that some unpaid intern had to count every word she said on Fox News for 3 years?
Also, you betcha.
Yeah, I'm not really sure how many of those were actually real words.
Do contractions count as two words if it's Sarah Palin?
I'm not really sure.
And if you looked at the word count from 2012, she was on so infrequently. I mean, she was probably making $50 a word compared to, you know, 2010, 2011.
Well, it said Hannity and Van Susteren both interviewed her 55 times, combined for nearly three-quarters of her appearances on the network over the last 36 months.
Wow.
That poor intern. Oh, my God.
But you know what? I think Eric, it really augurs for the future of Fox News, because your latest piece is titled, "Are Conservatives Rethinking the Fox News Outrage Model?" And you make a very, very good point that maybe, just maybe, some of our Republican brothers and sisters are a little bit sick about this all hissy fit all the time propaganda model that's been going on through Fox.
Yeah, Eric Erickson, who, you know, is a fairly prominent conservative commentator at CNN, and I believe one of the founders, certainly writes over at Red State. He wrote a piece last week saying, you know, basically, let's drop this phony outrage thing. He didn't mention Fox, but it was obvious. He was talking about outrage pimps on the left and the right, but the entire column was about, you know, what he claimed were these conservative, you know, town criers on the right. And he makes very good points. You know, it does nothing to build the movement. It doesn't get anyone elected. It turns people off. It's awful to listen to.
Do you really think it doesn't get anyone elected, Eric? I mean, couldn't you say that the reason why the Republicans did as well as they did in 2010 was that the outrage machine got people organized and mobilized?
I think it's different now. I think that was Erickson's point, was in 2010 we did something. We got out there. We knocked on doors. We held rallies. We created this movement. Yes, it imploded. But we created this thing, whereas if now all that grassroots, all that action is gone, and all that's left is this just sort of phony outrage. I can't believe fill in the blank said fill in the blank.
Yeah.
You know,
uh-huh.
and that's all that's left as the Tea Party has sort of crumbled. I think his point was there's nothing. We have no infrastructure. No one's doing anything. No one's, you know, Fox News, you know, is just complaining about how, you know, that Democrat was elected and now he wants to, you know, govern as a Democrat. That doesn't really do anything. You know?
Exactly. But it seems like that's all we've heard since the State of the Union. All my friends on the left are all saying Obama didn't mean anything. And all my friends on the right are saying Obama meant everything he said. And I imagine it's somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, it is. But the, you know, the phony outrage and just sort of being, you know, taking umbrage and everything, you know, 24 hours. What's Fox, to turn on Fox News this morning? What's the phony outrage? Oh, it's the Clinton Obama, interview last night. You know, and as we were talking on Inauguration Day, you know, it was only a matter, since Obama was the centerpiece of attention on Monday, everyone woke up knowing it was only a matter of time before the right-wing media and Fox would find something to freak out about, and it took about like 6 minutes into his address before they all figured out what it was. Oh, he's too liberal and this is too partisan. You know, I mean, it was inevitable. The only question is what's the fake imaginary slight going to be today, and what's it going to be tomorrow and the day after that? And again, I think Erickson, you know, he doesn't work for Fox, so, you know, he doesn't really do that at CNN, so he can afford to sort of call it out. But I think the point is it doesn't get anyone elected. And I think the point is, you know, Fox is interested in clicks and hits and phony outrage, so the same 3 million people will tune in every 20 minutes to be outraged all day long. But as the Republican Party has found out, that does not equate getting people elected, and that's where the conflict is.
I think you're right. I mean, Fox News, you know, they went from being the propaganda wing of the party to, along with Limbaugh, essentially running the party, and I don't think they care about elections. They care about ratings and profit, and that's why they may be hurting the Republicans in the long term. Eric, can you hang out throughout the break?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, we got to go make some money for Steph. We'll be right back after this with more with Eric Bolet. I want to talk to you about some very hilarious tweets, including Tucker Carlson being sexist while taking on sexism.
Yeah.
And we'll get to that and much more. It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
The station where the handbasket to hell leaves from. It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller.
Don't be fancy, just get dancy. Why so serious?
Stephanie Miller Show. I'm John Fugelsang. This is not Janis Joplin. And we thank you for joining us.
We're having a little dance party USA in the studio here.
Well, I can tell. I'm watching you guys on Current TV. It's like a rave. Yes, Current TV, which is still with us for the next several months. And you can still see the Stephanie Show if you get Current. If you don't, fire your cable company and get them, because I'm hosting Viewpoint now. And I'm thrilled to welcome back on the show Eric Bolet or Media Matters. Eric, before we get to Right Wing World, I want to just ask you really quickly about Tucker Carlson's tweet he sent out about letting women serve in active duty combat. Did you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, that was, he had two bizarre ones. One seemed to equate the Women in Violence Act with serving in the military. One being women being attacked by a partner is apparently the same as volunteering to serve your country. And the second was equating feminism with, what was it, you know, women having the opportunity to have their limbs blown off.
Yes. Tucker Carlson, noted anti-war activist.
Right, and noted frontline veteran. You know, now lecturing the likes of Tammy Duckworth about what it's like to serve in the military.
Yeah.
You know, it's just this is yet another debate the right wing has lost: immigration, gay rights, women serving in the military. I mean, it's all slipping away from them, and they're left with sort of these angry, sort of hollow retorts.
Yeah, so tired of the sexism, I gotta say. And it's been so brought into focus by the response over allowing women to serve, which, by the way, again, is a recommendation that came from the Joint Chiefs of Staff. This was not imposed on them by any civilians in the Pentagon or the White House. The Joint Chiefs recommended it because women are already in combat. Let's start paying the ones who are in combat what they deserve.
And you know, it's not like every woman in the military is going to be in combat. They're just like everything else in the military. You've got to earn it. You know, there's going to be tests. Come on, they're not just going to send people out there who aren't qualified. And sexism. We probably don't even have time to talk about Hillary's testimony on the Hill last week, and just the floodgates of right wing misogyny that opened up.
Oh, the cover
preview
of the New York
of what's
Post?
To come, I think.
I think you're exactly right, Eric, because these guys had 8 years of hating her as First Lady, 12 years of loving her as a senator and Secretary of State, and now they're looking at 2016, and they're going to hate her all over again to try and hurt her so Chris Christie, who they also hate, can become president.
it's
ridiculous. But and one more thing about the women in combat. There's so many men in the military who aren't fit for combat. There's other roles they have, and there's so many women in the military who are ready for combat and haven't been allowed to serve. And I want to go to Lieutenant Colonel Jerry Boykin. Let's begin Right Wing World with him on track number 12. He's, of course, the guy who came out a few years ago and said that he knew we'd win the war on terror because we worship a real God and they worship a false God.
Oh, that God.
Never mind the fact that both religions agree. It's the same God.
Yes.
So here's Lieutenant Colonel Jerry Boykin on Fox News Sunday.
Mixing the genders in those combat units where there is no privacy, where they're out on extended operations, and there's no opportunity for people to have any privacy whatsoever. I certainly don't want to be in that environment with a female because it's degrading and humiliating enough to do your personal hygiene and the other normal functions among your teammates.
Eric, is he saying we can go out and send them to kill people and be killed and be shot at, but it might be degrading if someone sees my wee-wee? Is that essentially what the colonel's saying?
Going to the bathroom, yeah. And again, the idea that, this hasn't been discussed within the Pentagon for at least a decade.
Right.
It hasn't been signed off by all the senior officials and things like that. I mean, what do these people think? That, Obama called up, the generals and said, make this happen? For someone like Boykin who's been in the military to pretend he has no idea, how decisions are made in the military, it's kind of funny.
Exactly. I think he's auditioning for a new job that's opened up at Fox. Let's go to Rush Limbaugh, the bloated gas bag himself, talking about women in the military. And this is Rush Limbaugh trying to not be sexist. Let's see if he can do it.
What we do, we call it the All-American First Cavalry Amazon Battalion. You have synchronized menstrual cycles timed in such a way so that on any day of the year, you are guaranteed to have a fighting female force.
Oh.
All in PMS.
Wow.
All during premenstrual syndrome. You can do it because they synchronize the cycles. And pretty damn good during combat at the same time. Talk to any man about not being sexist here.
Oh.
Can we start since there is one lady present? Because Jackie,
woman.
Yeah, he says the token female. Rush makes me ashamed to be a racist drug addict. But what do you think?
It's extraordinary to me that he can go out and say, what is this obsession with men speaking about women's issues in a horribly sort of uneducated, derogatory way? What is the obsession?
In Rush's case,
women. I don't understand.
I think it's Rush knowing his audience.
Yeah.
It's so unbelievably offensive in a way that totally, I would say, uncovers how little these men know about women.
Exactly.
Yeah, and that's the key. One of the keys. I mean, we're coming up on the Sandra Fluck anniversary.
Mm-hmm.
And what did Limbaugh, show us? Among his hatred and the sexism,
amazing.
And ignorance on birth control,
lack of understanding of how contraception works.
You know, I met her for the first time. I met her for the first time in D.C. over inauguration weekend, and it was very hard. I very rarely am sort of awestruck by anyone, just kind of the nature of this business. But it was very hard not to say to her, just thank you.
Right.
Thank you for just standing up and being strong and taking the heat for something that so many of us believe in, and it was just that moment of, I didn't know what to say to her other than thank you.
Well, of course, she seems strong. She's PMSing.
Yeah.
You know, and here's my theory on PMS. I think that men think that PMS is just this biological phenomenon that gives women license to bitch, okay? Bitch, moan, whine, bellyache, and lament. And men are like that all month long, but lack a medical excuse for it.
Yeah.
I call this PMS envy, and I think Rush suffers from it.
Yeah.
I'm happy to give you my PMS. If you want that excuse, you can have it. I'm more than happy to handle it.
You know what? The PMS isn't a strong enough term for what men suffer from all the time. let me go really quick, Eric, for one more, because it's not fair if we don't get some sexism from a woman, right?
You know what? We don't have time for Andrea Tanzaro's
support. Okay. Well, never mind. What a loss. Eric Bollert of Media Matters, thank you so much for joining us today.
Sure thing. Talk to you soon.
Okay.
Always a pleasure. Thanks. And we'll be right back taking your calls after this on The Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
Radio contact is sufficient. No need to extend your middle finger.
The Stephanie Miller Show. I'm John Fugelsang, filling in for Steph, along with Jim and Chris and Jackie in the L.A. Bureau, taking your calls at 800-STEPH-1-2. And Patricia is calling us from Georgia, all about the 60 Minutes interview last night, featuring the love fest of Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton.
That's right.
Hi there, Patricia. Good morning. You're on The Stephanie Miller Show.
Hi, good morning. I was just calling to express how I felt the interview was a great expression of how two adversaries can come together for the common good and rise above their disagreements for the betterment of America.
I agree. It was the most inspiring.
It really was. And how everyone keeps saying, you know, it's an endorsement for her presidency. I don't think it was. I think it was an example for our kids. I know my 14-year-old daughter took that away, that how they bitterly fought, and how in the end what they disagreed on, they came together to work towards the betterment of our country. And it's just such a wonderful example of what real democracy should be, is differing ideas coming together for the greater good.
I couldn't agree more, and I think you stated it beautifully, and thank you for the call. You know, it's interesting. I thought that one of the best moments of it was Hillary and Barack talking about how in the campaign it was kind of rough during the primary season because they both agreed on so many things. They didn't know how to fight each other.
Right, and that kind of, and I don't know if, well, we got in, on the Stephanie Miller Show, we got in quite a few fights with Hillary supporters because Stephanie was a big-time Obama supporter, and I kind of felt like it tore the party apart a little bit.
A little bit, but I think ultimately it made the party stronger. It's one of those things where it didn't
ultimately
wound
it did.
Them.
Yeah.
It didn't tear them apart. In fact, let's listen to Secretary Clinton on Cut 2 from last night on 60 Minutes with Steve Croft.
In politics and in democracy, sometimes you win elections, sometimes you lose elections. And I worked very hard, but I lost. And then President Obama asked me to be Secretary of State, and I said yes. And why did he ask me, and why did I say yes? Because we both love our country.
Very well put.
Yeah, yeah.
The president had this to say, cut one, about his time working.
I want the country to appreciate just what an extraordinary role she's played during the course of my administration. And a lot of the successes we've had internationally have been because of her hard work.
I'm sorry, I got to disagree with Patricia. That really sounded like Hillary's kickoff for 2016.
I agree, because here's my question. Yeah. I put this out to all the brilliant folks in Stephland. Why did they do this? It was the president who called 60 Minutes and wanted to do this joint interview, and it's something that they've never done before. Mm-hmm. So why was it done? Was it just a love letter thanking Hillary Clinton for her service? So that's great, but we have never seen this done for any other cabinet member by a president.
Right.
Any theories?
It was a kickoff.
It certainly seems that way.
Yeah, I mean, that's the only thing I can think of.
Yeah.
Jim,
yeah.
You seem like you're thinking about it.
I can't see any other reason for it. I mean,
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it seems like it was very diplomatic, and it was very, I have no doubt he's sincere about thanking her for her service to the nation and mm-hmm. to his administration. But at the same time, it looks like they've had a very strategic partnership. And that, you know, Hillary Clinton, if she wants to be president in 2016, it's the job is hers for the taking. Yeah. And I think that's great, and it's nice to see how happy that makes our Democratic friends. I do think it'd be worthwhile for Democratic friends to think about what kind of president they're looking for rather than personalities. Because while I admire Hillary Clinton very much, and if she's the nominee, I'll vote for her, I would like to see someone a bit more progressive challenge her for the nomination. I think that would be good for the party.
Yep, I agree.
Yeah, because we've had, you know, lots of nice moderate presidents. So a liberal Democrat wouldn't be the worst experiment to try. you know, and I love the president's speech, but as Lee Camp said on Viewpoint last week, look at the appointments. And looking at the appointments, it's you know, he's still, as Barack Obama himself said, in the 70s he'd be called a moderate Republican.
Mm-hmm.
And which is all the more, that's not slamming the president, that's who he is, but it is a way of slamming our Republicans who keep calling this a radical socialist. I'm like, if that's a radical socialist, let's get Bernie Sanders a moderate socialist.
Any suggestions on who could be a liberal person to run?
Well, there's very few politicians I would campaign door to door for, but Elizabeth Warren's one of them.
Okay.
And I look forward to seeing what the next few years bring. I would be thrilled if she was ever the president of my country. And who knows, you know, Jerry Brown might decide he's going to go for it for a third time. He seems to run every other decade,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, he might be
a little old.
Yeah, now.
Little old, but look at that old guy looks really good in California right now.
He looks
that old
really
guy
good.
Balanced a budget. That old guy managed to get the voters to vote for their own tax increase, and now, you know, it's been a lot of austerity for the voters of California, but they're going to have surpluses, and
that's
he can
right.
say, hey, I'm a real fiscal conservative. I did it.
I have to say that I was a little nervous when Jerry Brown became governor.
Hmm. Yeah?
Did you vote for him? I wasn't the... Well, I mean, it was either him or...
Him.
It was either him or the Republican who was running, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I voted for him in the primaries, though.
Really?
Yeah.
See, Jerry Brown, you know, I think back when he ran against Bill Clinton in 92, and I thought he was terrific back then, even though he was talking about a flat tax before any of the libertarians were. I don't think he favors that anymore. But seeing what he did as mayor of Oakland, and I was a big fan of the progressive talk radio show he did for a while,
mm-hmm.
You know, it's interesting to see. I know he's irritated a lot of our friends in California. He's cut funding. I have friends with handicapped children who are not fans of his anymore because of services that he cut.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, what he asked the voters to vote on higher taxes, the voters did, and now they've made a stronger, healthier economy. He kind of seems to have proven his own point.
Yep. Yeah,
we will see.
We shall see.
Okay, who else is on the phone?
Let's see, we've got Gary in Washington.
I've been waiting so long to talk to Gary in Washington. Good morning, Gary. You're here to talk about my favorite subject of the week, Harry Reid.
Yeah, I'd like to know where he comes from. I thought he was a progressive.
What
I mean, this
that?
guy. Well, he just caved with McConnell.
Mm-hmm. You might want to lower the volume on your radio.
Yeah.
Okay.
Can you do that?
Just a second. Yeah.
I don't like hearing myself on a good day. well, you know, the problem... Wow.
You know what? Let's go to the next person.
wait, is he back? Is he gone?
Yeah, he's gone. Sorry.
We lost him.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry, Gary. We're gone now. John in California, you're calling about gays and Sharia law. Two great tastes that go great together.
Hey, Gary. Hey, John.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm still here.
Huh?
Yeah.
Go ahead,
hi.
John.
Okay, I'm ready. Okay.
Okay.
I was watching C-SPAN on Friday, and they had a thing with Foster Freeze on there, and they were asking him about gay rights and did he favor more rights for gays. And he said, well, my main mission is to protect gays from Sharia law. My big wish, you guys, because I'm your biggest fan, is that you drill down on this. Look it up. It was on C-SPAN 2. It was called Politics and the Republican Party, Friday, C-SPAN 2. Yeah. Anyway, it just had me rolling in the aisle. And then
so what you're saying is that the man who fought for birth control by telling women to hold aspirin between their knees is now fighting. Now he's fighting for separation of mosque and state here in America.
Yes. Thank you. God, leave it up to you, John, to come up with that. Thank you.
I have more free time than most adults.
Can I have a shout out to Jim Ward?
Oh, hello.
Yeah.
Jim, okay, you. Cool. Jim, the day after the election, you said something that I've laughed so many times that I just got to hear it again, and it was that Mitch McConnell was seen crawling back into his terrarium to suck on a piece of vodka-soaked celery. And I said, good God, dude, that is the coolest thing I've ever heard. And so from John and Willits,
Thank you, guys.
Well, okay. Thank you, John.
Thanks for reminding
Thank you. And thanks for playing Pong during the interview, too. That sounded great. Richard is calling us from Chicago about the GOP. Good morning, Richard. You're on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Richard?
Richard?
Oh, Richard's gone.
Oh, so all right, let's get back. We didn't really get to talk about Harry Reid too much before with our last caller. So, Deb in California, are you there?
Hey, Deb.
Hey there, love.
Hi.
Go ahead.
So, I'm calling about Harry Reid. I'm going to pick up the baton where the other gentleman left off, and my radio's
Please.
Off. So, I was just hoping we all might be able to figure out the positive solution to the fail-ibuster.
Yeah.
The progressives in so-called red states, I guess, really need to be on the phone and emailing their senators and their congresspeople, because the only people that from out of state, only people we can call is Harry Reid and John Boehner, and these representatives and these senators are the ones that need to be contacted by actual people in their state because they don't listen to us. When we call, you know, they just don't.
Well, let me ask you about Harry Reid, because this is a guy who said that he was not going to do a handshake deal with Mitch McConnell, who said that it was a mistake for him to do that before. This is a guy who said that he promised multiple times he would do real filibuster reform. He said that Merkley and Udall were the brave young senators who were completely right and the rest of us were wrong. And then he caved on everything he'd been telling us for the past year. I mean, and you can look across your cable dial. You will see Rachel Maddow, Ed Schultz. They're all washing their hands of this guy.
Yeah.
We already know that Harry Reid is going to kill the assault weapons ban when it goes to the Senate himself because he doesn't want to get primaried. I think he should get primaried, frankly. I think it'd be great to see him have a real progressive challenger. But what do you say?
Well, at this point right now, what I can't believe is what the message that I left on his telephone message line last Friday or whenever it was that I hope that whoever paid him is more worth it to him than the American people, because he definitely was paid by somebody.
Why do you think that? Why do you think that? Why?
Well, because
doesn't it seem like he made a deal? Doesn't it seem like this is part
yes.
of some compromise?
Oh, yes. Instead, because of all the stuff he was saying things in May of 2012 that were that, oh, we got to stop making deals with these. Well, anyway, you don't want to hear the words that I have to describe these people. But when I make the phone call, that's the message that I left. And now that message machine is full.
Yeah, it's been full for weeks because last week on Viewpoint, I did a commentary on it, and I put Harry Reid's phone number on the screen for people to call him. And by the next morning, everyone told me it was completely filled up with voicemail.
You're such a scamp.
I left something there and then pressed 1 for to send it to him. But I'm absolutely sure he disregards anything except where the big dollars are. And we're just citizens. We're just the electorate. That's all.
Well, you know what, Deb? I thank you for the call, and we may just be the electorate, but the fact is, they work for us.
Yeah.
And, we already know Harry Reid's going to kill the assault weapons ban. He couldn't be any less enthusiastic about it. He comes from a big gun state. He almost got beaten by a mental patient in the last election.
Yes.
And, I'm sorry, I don't mean to be derogatory to mental patients by comparing them to Sharon Engel. But, it was such a squeaker for him that I think that he's really afraid for his job, and that's why he's not going to run the risk of alienating anyone. So Harry Reid joins the ranks of politicians who are willing to put their job above your children's safety. And that's how it is, because I'm with Stanley McChrystal. General McChrystal was right. Civilians don't need these weapons. And Harry Reid has just made it that the Senate's a place where 45 senators get to control the other 55.
Yep. Good boy.
If I ever get divorced, I want Harry Reid to represent my wife. Because, I'll get everything. We'll be back after this, taking your calls at 1-800-STEPH-12. It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Go ahead. Laugh out loud in your cubicle. Everyone already thinks you're a left-wing lunatic anyway. It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller. Girl.
Good morning. This is the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm John Fugelsang, filling in for Steph all morning long, taking your calls at 1-800-STEPH-12 and joined in the L.A. Bureau Bye, well, Jackie.
What's that? You just did a whole New York thing.
I'm taking your calls.
Mike, we're taking your calls all morning.
Did you want a shia with your bagel?
I got a brother named Paul taking my calls at the mall.
I can scoop that for you, but...
Look, I'm half Southern, half Brooklyn. I got every accent in creation. And I live with a woman from Northern California, so I have every accent.
My God.
I grew up in a y'all use household. It was bilingual. Mom called us y'all and dad called us rat bastards. So that's how it is. and we are taking your calls. Joined of course by Jackie Schechner and Jim Ward and Chris Lavoie.
Hiya.
LA. And Stephanie.
I got the French pronunciation.
Indeed you did, because you're such an America hater.
Yes.
And Stephanie's homesick. We send her our love and wishes for a speedy recovery. And do my eyes deceive me? Is the one and only Kenny Pick of Cleveland on the phone
now? Hey, Kenny Pick.
Good morning, Ken.
Hey, I will offer you some fine northeastern Ohio accent stylings. No. Which is not much. But and good morning everybody. And that whole Limbaugh shtick about the PMS Amazon Army thing that he's always talking about. He's been doing that, and believe it or not, yes, Rush Limbaugh did stand up way back in the day. And there's videos out there from the late 80s, early 90s. Of him doing the shtick, so he knows exactly who, you know, the audience he's playing to. So I think what everybody should do is join with me in chorus, as he called Sandra Fluck a slut, we should call Limbaugh the Hut. Go that way with it.
Yeah,
you
know that I'm still so astounded that he did that. That like in this century, there's still, you know, men are still using the word slut on women as a pejorative. When if you know, just because she spoke about contraception being a legitimate women's health care issue, if you believe that contraception is a legitimate health care issue, then we're all sluts now. And
yeah.
Rush Limbaugh is just another lame guy who's confused slut with skank.
Yeah, exactly. So,
skanks are tragic. Sluts are the chosen people.
Exactly.
Wow.
So, but hey, thanks so much, and I'll talk to you soon.
All right.
Thank you, Kenny.
Thanks, Kenny.
Woo-hoo. Always nice to hear from him.
Yeah.
We have Dana in Maryland calling about Paul Ryan, the Chartmaster.
Hey, Dana.
Hey, how are you?
Good. What's up?
Good. How's everybody doing?
Good.
We're great now.
Good. Jackie, you look beautiful.
Oh, aren't you a sweetheart? Thanks.
Doesn't she, though?
Black. No, I just wanted to say again, the show was so great. We're all still reeling.
That's right.
So
you were at Sexy Liberal D.C.
I was.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Dana,
don't you remember? I'm your teabagger wife, remember?
Yes. And you came all the way from Maryland just to see us. It was a pleasure.
It was so great to meet you guys. You were awesome. Jim,
for the folks who don't know, we do these meet and greet tickets. I mean, I'm sure you've heard Steph talk about it before, where for some people who buy the meet and greets, after the show, we hang out and horrify the fire code and hang out and we meet everyone and hang out, and we hung out for, God, it must have been a good 2 hours of just mixing with the fans, and it was really a lot of fun.
Awesome, isn't it?
Yeah.
It was a great show, too. I thought having Hal and Aisha on the same show
was, oh my God, she was hysterical.
And she
always
is.
So, Chris, I was thinking, I like Barbara Boxer.
Oh, as a possible liberal contender for president.
I think she's awesome.
Okay.
I don't know what you guys think. Okay,
I think she's great.
It's about abortion. It's about Paul Ryan and on Meet the Press and David Gregory with the softballs again, and nobody asks him, you know, their jobs. But, you know, then he's trying to shove another personhood bill through. So it's like the first thing he does.
Mm-hmm.
And why doesn't he ask him about that? You know, jobs, no. And in New Mexico, this woman says the fetus can now be a piece of evidence.
Yes. That's
I mean, after somebody's raped.
Yeah, this is a bill that was submitted and where she said that if a woman terminates the pregnancy, if a woman becomes pregnant during a rape, and she terminates the pregnancy before the child comes to term, that she could be prosecuted for evidence tampering. There was outcry, so she removed the element of the woman being prosecuted, but now if she terminates, then they can prosecute the rapist for evidence tampering, even though he didn't perform the abortion, and the doctor can be brought up on charges of evidence tampering and a rape.
And he'd have fatherly rights, too. I mean, it's insane. It's insane.
Well, it shows how little respect they have for science, because, of course,
no,
I'm sure
know.
You know.
I do know. And John Boehner went on the other day because it was they had the parade or whatever they call it, the pro-lifers down in D.C. every year. And, you know, he made like a public service announcement, you know, how life is sacred and Roe v. Wade. I mean, he just went all out. And it's scary that this is where we are.
Yeah, it really is. And you know, the one question I'd like to see these guys ask, I've said this before on the show and it makes people mad, but I have no problem if you're opposed to abortion for moral reasons or religious reasons, even though Jesus never mentioned abortion, right, but was clearly against the death penalty pro some lifers, even if, right, you're against it and you want to use the legislative process to protect the unborn, you have a right to do that. It's a free country. You should take full advantage of it and do it. And if that's the only issue you care about and you want to ignore them as soon as they're born, well, you're a horrible person, but you have a right to do that. However, I want to see one of these so-called journalists say to the Paul Ryans of the world, say to the Mitt Romneys of the world, just ask them one question. Once you've achieved your dream America and abortion is outlawed, who deserves longer jail sentences? The women who terminate pregnancies or the doctors who perform them? Because it went, yep, on for a long time before Roe versus Wade. Women with money could always terminate pregnancies, mm-hmm, and it's, yep, going to go on forever. Abortion's always been around. It'll always be around. This is trying to do what Bill Clinton said, make it safe, legal, and rare. And I want to, yes, hear Paul Ryan say how much time a woman who terminates a pregnancy deserves in jail. And if journalists start asking that, you'll see this Republican Party marginalized out of existence.
I would love to see that, and I wish that it would happen. Because you know what? An abortion is not a trip to Disneyland.
No. It's not. It's not. And
it's horrific. You know what? And I mean, it is awful. So you feel shame, you know, regret. I mean, I still regret to this day, did I do the right thing?
Mm-hmm.
And it's nobody's business but mine. And now I'm telling the whole world, but that's okay. You know, everybody listening. But it's,
you know what? And that's very brave of you to do.
Yeah,
so
it is.
We should say, and again, no one there's that, to be able to say it openly, because there are so many women,
right,
who do and
thank
can't
you,
talk
Jackie,
about it.
No
and
one is pro-abortion. They just
want
to be pro-women's reproductive rights.
That's right.
We'll be right back after this break.
Gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm John Fugelsang, filling in for Steph all morning, whether you like it or not. Why are you laughing, Jackie Shackman?
I am half an apple, and I was like, I don't think I can eat this on camera.
No, you cannot.
That's right, and she says on camera because you can still watch the Stephanie Miller Show on Current TV if you're lucky enough to get it. You should get Current TV if you don't, because I'm hosting Viewpoint now.
That's right.
The show formerly hosted by Governor Elliot Spitzer and the staff formerly that ran Keith Olbermann's excellent show. These people have now run three shows at Current, and I'm number three, and we're every night of the week.
We're number three.
Well, go ahead and mock if you want, but we're having a great time.
I know
on
you
Viewpoint.
Are. You're doing a great job too.
Thank you. We've had some great guests, and we're getting more and more. Every week, I'm fighting off congressmen with a stick. Now we just had John Conyers and Loretta Sanchez the other night.
Wow.
We're getting, you know, journalists like Tomasky and of course the great Eric Bollert. And then every night, what I wanted to do with it was to keep the first half of the show very serious, talking with congressmen and talking with journalists, and then the second half to be more comedic, and we're having all comedian panels every night with people like Sherrod Small and Judy Gold, and it's just been a riot.
How much fun.
Yeah, and TV's Frank Conniff of Mystery Science Theater is my head writer. He was hired to write for the show I was supposed to do, and then that show's not going to happen. So we don't know how much longer Current will be there until Al Jazeera America takes over, but we are having as much fun as possible until that happens. And so that's why I lost Time Warner. I mean, Time Warner Cable dropped Current, which I think was pretty disgusting and sleazy. Mm-hmm. And so I think they'll pick it back up again. I'm sure they're going to carry Al Jazeera America. It's going to be a really good news network. But I have to shift now and get a new cable carrier because the people I live with want to watch my show.
Do you have options in New York?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm getting DirecTV. I'm going to get it. Yeah, there's just, you know, Governor Granholm's show is still on. The Young Turks with Cenk is still on.
Yeah.
Stephanie Miller, Bill Press, if you're up at ungodly o'clock, is still on. And quite honestly, I miss this programming, so I'm switching my cable carrier because I want to be able to keep on enjoying the programming on Current that that Al Gore put together for as long as I can.
I remember when I was in New York, there was such a monopoly on cable providers. I don't even know that we had access to DirecTV or any sort of digital system. You pretty much had to go with Time Warner, and that was it.
Right.
So it's good that we now have a choice.
Slime pointer, as Stephanie used to call it.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, but tell me about it. I'm learning that vividly. And I want to take this chance to really briefly give a shout-out to AM950, our affiliate in Minneapolis. I had the honor of being there this weekend to headline the Blue State Ball, along with Tom Hartman and Ed Schultz and Congressman Keith Ellison, who's a very cool guy. He's coming on my show this week. And I want to just thank all of them for keeping progressive radio alive and well. And for all of you guys for listening to the Stephanie Miller
Yay!
Show.
So,
Kermit and Flannel. We actually, and Jim, guess who I've got on the on Viewpoint tomorrow to talk about the immigration package?
Kirk Douglas.
No, what is?
Wow.
What are you saying, Jim? What is your favorite congressman's name to pronounce?
Charlie Rangel.
Well, second
okay.
favorite.
Okay. Oh.
Oh. For immigration, that would be Raul Grijalva.
Oh, Raul Grijalva.
That would have been such a good bit had he caught on.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it wouldn't be a Jim bit if he didn't have the wrong answers the first couple of times. So I listened to the show.
Hey, can we talk about Scott Brown?
Yeah, let's get to that. Because Jackie, can you explain what is going on? Is Scott
no,
Brown,
I can't explain. That's the best part.
Is he spending too much time in a pickup truck in cold weather right now? What's going on?
So former Senator Scott Brown, we were talking about this morning. Over the weekend, he sent out a series of tweets.
Late at night. Late at night, correct?
Like after midnight when you shouldn't be tweeting, as we all know. Post-Ambien, after midnight on a weekend, anything like that.
What can Brown do for you?
Exactly. And he sent out a series of tweets where he was responding, and I guess he said whatever a couple of times, and then he tried to tweet whatever, it looks like.
Yeah.
But the word was a non-word, which was spelled B-Q-H-A-T-E-V-W-R.
Like his hand was like one key off on the keyboard, and so it was typing.
Yeah, which is actually like, if you try to recreate it, sort of not all that
I think it actually
doable.
Does mean something in Albanian.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
But that became a popular Twitter hashtag over the weekend. And people had, yeah, it was great. And people had all sorts of takes on what it could possibly be.
Yeah, go onto Twitter and search Scott Brown, and you'll find this word he invented. I just, why do you, if you want your Senate job back, why do you type that? And then hit send. I don't understand. And Jackie, am I right that Scott Brown went back and retweeted and deleted all of his tweets?
Yeah, which of course is like rule number one for ways to try to not draw attention to yourself on Twitter is to try to erase your internet history. So he got rid of it, but obviously it's already caught on before then. And we, Chris and I were discussing this morning before we came on the air that, you know, obviously he at some point had staffers in charge of this Twitter account, but the Boston Globe was reporting that he's taken it back over, and it's been evident through a series of tweets that have gone out since he lost his seat, where he's talking about very personal things, his his activities and what he's doing, gardening and things like that. Not, you know, not very, very personal.
He's talking about his own gardening?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
But things that wouldn't be a staffer's responsibility or the information that a staffer would have, it really now is just more personal, and so that makes it more obvious that this came from him in the middle of the night. And then, of course, people are making excuses that perhaps his cat sat on the computer or...
Oh, please.
But I got to be honest with you.
A cat cannot type whatever.
Wow.
Well,
why didn't Anthony Weiner know about the cat excuse?
Yeah. My cat spends a lot of time sitting on my computer because it's warm and she likes it. She's never put a hashtag and a word in send. Like, it just never happened. So, yeah, but it's great. If you go on Twitter, it's really fun to kind of scroll through some of the stuff that people are saying about this fake whatever word.
I'd read tweets from Emmy.
My cat? That.
Yeah.
Yeah, well,
really?
She sends out kitty pictures, too, like all sorts of...
Okay.
Yeah.
I read tweets from Dexter Von Frisch, which is Carl Frisch's dog's Twitter.
Yeah, no, I don't have an actual Twitter account for my cat, but I do post pictures of my cat, which makes me the crazy cat lady.
Well, everybody does. I do that.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, I did have a Facebook profile for my cat. That's
did
true.
You really?
Yeah, I sure did.
Oh,
you used to stroll him around New York too, didn't you?
In a stroller.
Well, he liked the stroller. The one, his surviving cat does not like the stroller, so I don't do it too much
anymore.
He has
some dignity, is that?
No. I had the
did
coolest.
Put a baby
cat.
Bonnet on it.
Y'all suck. I drove cross country with this cat twice. He liked traveling. He was like a dog. And he got his own Facebook profile where I just put pictures of him with all of Charmy's hot friends. And then when he left, I made it my private one to post baby pictures so my conservative family will think I'm a real human.
Aww. That is totes adorbs.
Isn't that totes adorbs? Oh, totes adorbs.
Can we?
Totes adorbs is hella derp, by the way.
I was going to say, put a moratorium on phrases like that.
You know, I hate all these trendy idioms, but at the end of the day, it is what it is, and it's all good. Lol. we have people on the phone, do
yeah.
we not?
Oh,
okay,
yeah.
Is Robert in Tucson still with us?
Oh, Robert has left us.
Is Steve in Chicago still with us?
Steve in Chicago is here. Hello, Steve. Steve in Chicago.
Steve.
Oh, for
you,
the
you've
love
held
of all
on.
Things holy.
I think it was attacked by a
bag
of vipers.
Oh, hi, Steve.
Sorry about that. I totally got lost in the show.
That's a polite way for it.
I just really wanted to say that I'm a little afraid of a repeat of 2010 because, in my opinion, the reason why that happened was we had a series of events ever since Obama's first election where the Democrats became very disgruntled. They felt that he was caving. He didn't support the things that he threw out there and we promoted.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people didn't show up in 2010. So then
that's
we
what Stephanie Miller accuses me and Chris and Jim of. That Stephanie
and
accuses
of,
me.
What Harry Reid just didn't do, I've been hearing about in the past few days is how everybody wants Harry Reid impeached, and you know everybody is disgruntled again.
Well, let's talk about that. Are we more loyal to ideology or party?
I personally think it's ideology.
And we have to compromise, right? We have to find ways to support the politicians who are going to bring us the most progress while not giving up our ideology just for the sake of winning, right? It's a delicate balance that liberals seem to be pretty good at. We can walk and chew gum mentally at the same time, right?
Oh, absolutely. And I agree with you 100%. I actually had a problem with how happy-clappy this show was a few years ago until I saw the damage that the Democratic talk show hosts that want to be really independent, and so they spend a lot of time on the negative, especially the negative towards the upper echelon of the executive branch, and I think that fuels the flames. I don't think what you guys are doing is, the Republican way of, gathering the wagons in a circle, that kind of a
right.
thing.
It's impossible for Democrats to do that.
Well, but I think
not spending as much time on the negative stuff, fueling, you know, what is most of the time just conjecture anyway.
Yeah. Well, sometimes it's more than just conjecture. In the case of Harry Reid, it's a lot of promises he's been making to the base, to the Democratic Party, not the liberals, but the Democrats in general, about the need for filibuster reform, about how he wouldn't do what he did before again, no more handshake agreements with Mitch McConnell, that the young senators who wanted to have filibuster reform were right and he was wrong. He was very, very specific. And then he, of course, voted to have a recess on the first day of the Senate session last week so it would last a few more days, which I don't understand, Harry Reid. If you're afraid of bullies, the last thing you want is more recess. Mm-hmm. But and then he went ahead and he caved anyway. He completely
yep.
caved anyway, gave
Absolutely.
The farm away to Mitch McConnell, and now it was, you know, it's a lot of liberals get frustrated when Democrats have moderate improvements that they call reform. But if there's one thing,
I think our job now is going to be to try and pick everybody back up again, because I think that I don't think there's much of a positive spin on this. I mean, the only excuse that I've heard politicians give is, well, what happens if we're in the minority? But that doesn't matter because we don't filibuster. It doesn't
well,
affect
Well, Democrats do filibuster. They filibustered under George Bush, but we don't do it to the obnoxious degree where we stop any kind of legislation from happening and completely shut the country down. But I think we've learned a valuable lesson from the Tea Party. The Tea Party has taught a lot of liberals that purity tests, for the sake of purity tests alone, will kill your party. And for everyone who's mad at Obama for not being more to the left, I understand, but look at the mirror side of what the Tea Party has done in terms of leading this party off a cliff, getting these Tea Party candidates in primaries who are unelectable. And I'd love to see Dennis Kucinich as president, but I know that if he got the nomination, he'd be flattened. So
right,
it's
yeah.
like we have to have this compromise. Progress takes time.
What you just said to me is exactly what happened in 2010 when we various, you know, Democratic voters just had a problem with various things.
I'm going to disagree with you. I don't blame Democratic voters. I don't blame progressive discontent with the president for 2010. I blame a couple things. Number one, people not showing up to vote. Me and Chris and Jim criticized the president, but we showed up. We showed up to vote in 2010. A lot of Democrats didn't. The ones who criticized the president still came out to vote. And again, you have to keep in mind the historical reality that generally, unless a 9/11 happens, a new president always loses seats at the first midterms, and the GOP is just more organized. Because they have their all of AM radio, they have the Fox News, they have 24-hour propaganda that are getting people angry and outraged, as Eric Bohler talked about earlier today.
Well, I hope you're right, John, because 2014 is going to be kind of shaky.
Well, Steve, I thank you for the call. It will be shaky, but it's not going to be shaky if we keep shining a light on the issues that matter and get progressives and Democrats and moderates all and sane conservatives all together and say that, you know, look, you've got a relatively conservative Democrat, and fiscally, you know, that's what makes all the liberals angry. So let's work together to make the country better instead of just this dodgeball team democracy we're choking under now.
Dodgeball. Yes.
And that's all the preachiness I got in me. We got to take a break. It's the Stephanie Miller Show. We'll be right back after this.
Join the party. 1-800-STEP-12.
Stephanie Miller.
You're a rock star. Get the show on. Get paid.
This is the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm John Fugelsang, and that is Smash Mouth with All Star.
Yeah.
It's like a time machine back to 2000. And we're taking
no,
your calls.
No, even earlier than that. That had
that
to
was
be
the 90s?
Late 90s, because
I
used that
right.
in a news package about the Hagerstown Suns All-Star team.
Wow.
And that would have been in 97, 98.
Oh, my God.
Synchronicity. Speaking of the 90s.
Yeah. That's how I remember
Wait, that was the 80s.
1998 was 15 years ago. That's what's
crazy. Yeah, Smash Mouth's first song, Walking on the Sun, came out in 97.
There
Mercy.
You go. So that
and
was
now,
the late 90s.
Back to the countdown.
All right, I want
to... A long-distance dedication to John Fugelsang in our New York studio.
Thank you very much. That's going straight out to you. Because for years I worked on my Casey Kasem until I realized it was also my Mr. Sulu from Star Trek.
It was also your Shaggy from Scooby-Doo.
Well, zoink, Scoob! Really?
A lot of people don't realize that Casey Kasem was the voice of Shaggy on Scooby-Doo.
Yes, he was.
He
was.
Zoinks!
He was.
I feel richer for that information.
There you go. That's why I'm here.
And we'll be right back with
the
Scooby Snack.
It's stuck in my head.
And you know who was the voice of the Joker on the Batman Adventures?
Who?
Friend of the show, Mark Hamill.
Mark Hamill, yep.
Oh, friend
Indeed
of the
he
show.
Was.
Yeah.
Mark Hamill, who I think is on a treadmill right now getting ready for episode 7, which is going to be directed by J.J. Abrams,
which
by the
awesome.
Way.
Which is awesome. Hello.
That's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
I think the guy directing Star Trek directs Star Wars. In the 80s, this would have been heresy. I want to take some more calls because I want to. We have a call about this New Mexico abortion bill, and I just want to remind people what this is about. It's House Bill 206. It was introduced by a female Republican state rep, Catherine Brown, and it would charge a rape victim who ended her pregnancy with a third-degree felony.
Right.
For tampering with evidence. She's now backed off of actually prosecuting the rape victims and just want to prosecute the doctors. But it will still, if not prosecuting, it will force women to carry their rapist baby to term. And I believe Maria is calling us from Chicago.
That's right. Hey, Maria.
Hi there, everybody.
Good morning.
Hello. Good morning.
You, I've got Chris, Jim, Jackie, and John. Are you kidding me right now?
Yeah, bro.
You get to watch you on Viewpoint, and then I get to wake up to you this morning? Oh, my heavenly stars.
All you got to do is buy me a drink. It's not hard to wake up with me, I promise. But, yeah, thank you. Yeah, thanks for mentioning Viewpoint.
Of course. So, I wanted to talk about this bill, which I think is absolutely positively ludicrous. But there's an inherent flaw in it, which really interests me, is if the purpose is... It's the whole thing behind it is tampering with evidence.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That is completely ridiculous, because if there is an aborted fetus, wouldn't you be able to extract DNA from that fetus?
Exactly right. You can. And again, we're not pro-abortion. We're pro-women's reproductive freedoms here. But yes, you are actually able to extract DNA, so you don't actually need to have the woman carry her rapist baby to term and then, I guess, put her on Maury to have a test and find out if it's the rapist baby. So,
and what it really is about, though, and they're just covering it over this thing about evidence tampering, is it's really about suppressing women's ability to access to health care and their ability to make a choice, which, by the way, is not an easy one for anyone, regardless of the circumstances.
Yep.
And it's specifically about suppressing that ability and that right for women. And it enrages me, frankly.
Maria, you win the radio today, even though you're doing an interview from inside the Super Collider wind tunnel. And I thank you for the call.
That was me, sorry.
Okay, that was Chris being rude, Maria, not us. But I think she makes a great point. It's not pleasant to talk about, but this whole bill is anti-science to the core.
Yeah.
You know, it's another way of forcing women to give up their own liberty, which was one of the reasons given by Supreme Court justices holding up Roe versus Wade.
Mm-hmm. I think it's an important distinction that we can't make often enough is when you talk about the difference between being pro-abortion, which I don't think many people are,
no.
and pro-choice, which I think everybody who comes down on that side of the debate is.
Right, that everybody can make their own
decision. Make your own decision.
Right.
It's absolutely not an easy decision. No. I don't know anyone who's come to it lightly. I don't think anybody does it frivolously. I think it is incredibly emotional for the mm-hmm. women involved.
And traumatic.
The partners involved. It is traumatic. There are lingering effects of it emotionally and otherwise. And I think that having to go through the entire process and make the decision and then go through with it is something that lingers. And I think that you absolutely have to make that distinction. And if you don't, then you're trivializing what the entire debate is about to begin with. Because I don't think anybody says, I would like to have an abortion. Let's mm-hmm. let's go out on a Tuesday and have an abortion.
Nobody says that.
It doesn't happen.
I had two this morning.
Yeah, no, well, why not, right?
Like, hang on, Jim. If men could get pregnant, locker room douchebags would be bragging over who'd had the most. I think we all know
exactly.
that.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, and I, you have to make that distinction because you can't say that you're pro-abortion and pro-life.
No one's
that's
pro-abortion.
Not the opposite. No, that's not the
and
opposite
I'll say
side
it,
of the
I've said it on this show before. You're right, Jackie. I'll say it again. We don't have an abortion problem in this country. We have an unwanted pregnancy problem and an abortion symptom. You want to take care of this? Fix unwanted pregnancies. The Stephanie Miller Show. We'll be right back.
I must say,
Stephanie Miller,
pretending to have intercourse with you has given me a great deal of satisfaction.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm John Fugelsang, filling in with Chris LaVoy and Jim Ward and Jackie Schechner.
Good morning.
Sending out a birthday greetings to Lucinda Williams. And for my money, the best country singer in the world. Time Magazine called her America's greatest songwriter. She turns 60 this weekend.
Wow.
And she's a rock star and a country star. And Kevin is in D.C. Kevin in D.C. is calling about Harry Reid. Kevin, are you there?
Yes, good morning, crew.
Hey,
good morning.
It was good to see you in D.C. at Sexy Liberal.
Absolutely, and the nerd herd loved you guys. I can't believe you took the time to... I am still stunned. I'm looking at the footage. These guys actually answered seriously, went into it like it was an important issue, so thank you guys.
Aww. You're the guy that Stephanie was kissing in the audience during the show.
Yes, I had to be fed intravenously for a few days. I did not want to alter the tingle of the kiss.
Well, I'm sorry. I'm sorry she couldn't be here. It turns out she has life-threatening mono. But what's your question?
Well, I don't. Hey, I'll share anything with her. Even that. Nothing she can do can turn me off. You guys should know that by now.
Yeah,
the spirakeets will be so pleased. So what's going on, Kevin?
I'm going to be the contrarian just a little bit.
Okay, please.
Because I am often have lived my life a worst case scenario person and it served me well. and for that reason, the thing with Harry Reid, I was upset that he did that. I have the footage. In fact, I was looking back at footage where he said he wasn't going to do that. He made a big deal on, well, you're friends with Ed Schultz. I don't know if that's a competitor, but I'll say it because Stephanie's friends with him. But anyway.
I'm a friend of his. Ed's been very good to me. But
okay, cool. Great. All right. But the thing is, you've just detailed that woman that put up that horrible bill concerning
yes.
abortion. But there's a whole plethora of horrific things that Republicans want to do. And we're already defending from now to 2014, 20 of the 33 Senate seats that are up for election, we have to defend 22 if you count the retirement of Senator Harkin and the other guy. I forget who else is retiring. So
Jay Rockefeller of West Virginia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yes. So if God forbid the shoe was on the other foot, I do not want a tool out of the toolbox to fight against the horrific policies. You know, take it from me. Yes, you know, in this instant, I want instant gratification. I want what I want, you know, generation. I understand all that. But take it from me as a man with my shade. Some of the successes and the improvements that I have seen by being patient have been incredible. So yes, sometimes things take a while, but you can't, you know, like the Rolling Stones said, you can't always get what you want. That's real life.
Yeah, and you can't always get what you've been promised by your majority leader for over a year. And would you at least agree that going back to the talking filibuster and letting the American people see what they're paying for when democracy is being obstructed wouldn't hurt the Democrats, right? That wouldn't hurt the Democrats to bring that back, would it?
Yes, anything that we can do, save completely getting rid of it. I'm done. I agree with you, John. You're preaching to the choir. I'm emotionally upset about it. My first gut reaction when I first heard about it was at work, and you know, someone came to me and showed it to me. I said, no way. And someone showed it to me in line. I said, oh my God, it's true. But again, I'm a worst-case scenario type of person, and when I think of the horrific things, the horrific policies, the Republicans are so ideological that even though they lost the election, even though they're down in the toilet in the ratings, they try to go about their agenda like it never happened. That's the mindset they have. So if God forbid we're on the other end, I want whatever tool we can to slow them down. I agree with everything. Everyone who's upset, I am upset as well, but I'm not 100% upset as everyone because of the situation I mentioned. That's the only thing.
Okay. Well, I appreciate that.
If we can do that better later, fine. You know, this is not a TV show where it's solved in 22 minutes plus commercials. In real life, it may take a little longer to get what we want.
I exactly right. And that's why, you know, we don't like the word compromise, but it's essential. And the Tea Party has shown us that if you refuse to compromise, you will marginalize. So I thank you for the call.
But doesn't it feel like we compromise a lot?
We don't compromise. The Democrats in the House and Senate
compromise.
That's
what I mean. But doesn't it feel like we do a lot more compromising than the other side?
I completely agree. And while I respect the incremental progress we've made, I'm ready for real reform, not incremental progress.
Mm-hmm. And what happens when you stand your ground, when you have a majority in the Senate and you've got the White House and you've got a mandate from the American people to make the changes you campaigned on? Where's the harm in pushing a little bit harder?
Well, and this is the problem people had with the public option. You know, the Democrats said that they couldn't do a public option because that would require a reconciliation vote, not a 60-vote majority.
Why not?
And so, why not indeed? Well, but that's what they said. And then what did they do with the Affordable Care Act, with the mandate? They went ahead and used the reconciliation anyway. The thing they said they wanted to avoid, they went ahead and did it. So if you're going to do that anyway, you could have given us a public option, and our economy would be much stronger. Every CBO estimate has shown that while the Affordable Care Act will shave over $100 billion off the deficit, it would have been a lot more with a public option.
Well, that would have been the cost control that we need in place, and we're going to have to revisit that down the line because there's no way that you're going to control the skyrocketing costs of health insurance and health care overall without introducing some sort of provision into this health care exchange that limits costs. So.
Jackie speaks the truth. And I'll go one step beyond it. What is sane about making employers pay for their employees' health care? Like, how is that pro-business? How is that pro-capitalism? All of our capitalist allies have single payer. Mm-hmm. You know that socialism we're afraid of? Well, show me a capitalist ally that doesn't have it already. Right. And again, when we're doing that, then you'll see that we will no longer have a country where the leading cause of bankruptcy is inability to pay health care costs. We're going broke over this. And if you really were afraid of the competition a public option or cheaper Canadian drugs bring, then you ain't a capitalist, my friend.
That's the crazy part, is that they argue that they can't compete with the public option, and at the same time they were arguing that the public option was going to be crap and nobody wanted it. So it's one or the other, right? It's either really horrible and nobody's going to use it, or it's going to be so unbelievably competitive that the private health insurance companies can't compete with it. But you can't have it both ways. And
that was
a big problem, is that Democrats didn't message it properly, and certainly members of Congress didn't have the right talking points to fight back, especially against the Tea Party uprisings back in August when we had that giant coup out in public, because people didn't know what it was and what they were talking about. I mean, we just didn't get out in front of the public option messaging as quickly and as strongly as we should have and could have.
But also, just the phrase public option, if they call it citizen's choice, you would have gotten Republicans on our side.
Yeah, the naming was just complicated. That was a big problem, because I was really a big part of what we call it and how we call it. And you can't call it a government plan. You can't call it
The citizen's choice. And saying, by the way, that a public option would hurt private health care is like saying community college hurts the Ivy League. It's like saying that UPS, that the post office has destroyed UPS and FedEx. It isn't. It doesn't work that way.
No, it was a really good example of that kind of competition.
Well, let me let Jim get a word.
I was going to say...
why would we do that?
Actually, look at all the countries that have opted for the American system of healthcare. There's,
But, Jim, you know how the Hannitys of the world turn that around. They come out and say, we have the best healthcare system in the world. Why do so many people come to this country for care? But the point is, no one's disputing the quality of our care or our science or our doctors. It's the access. It's the access to that care. Exactly. And that's where we have true inequality. Equality in America. Gwen is on the phone from North Carolina about the real Republicans. Gwen, are you still with us?
I sure am.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning. I don't know if I'm nervous or just pissed off. I think that someone needs to tell real Republicans who care about their party, it's all right to vote against these people. I mean, you have people that are taking votes away from people. After they do this, whose vote are they going to take next?
Mm-hmm.
And if they don't stand up against them, then they're part of the problem.
You're exactly right. And if they're trying to get minority votes and so they're a big party and a big tent, I don't know why they're trying to alienate so many minority voters.
They're not trying to get them.
You're right.
Why should they if they can steal your vote away from you?
They're saying so white folks will feel better about supporting this party.
I beg your pardon?
They keep saying they're trying to get minority votes, so white folks will feel better about still supporting the Republican Party. To say that, we're not bigoted. We're trying to get more minorities to come in, and then they turn around and say, well, they just want free stuff. You know, it's just all lies, and it's how racism is dressed up in the 2013.
But there are a lot of Republicans that know this is crap.
Yeah.
But they're so afraid to stand up against these people. They need to say, hey, enough is enough.
Mm-hmm.
Because until they hold their end of the bargain of democracy, until they hold their end, we can't do anything. And they need to get out there. They love their country so much, you can't sit back in the chair and talk about it.
Hmm.
You got to get up and move. And if enough of them say, hey, this ain't right and I'm not going for it, things will change.
You're right. You're exactly right. Thank you very much for the call, Gwen. Good points.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. By the way, getting a lot of tweets. We do read your tweets on the air. Everyone's saying that we should go for Dish instead of DirecTV if you want to get current. But so there's that.
Either one is fine.
Either one is fine. They're both quality providers. Yeah, I have no preference. As long as you're getting current TV, because we've got a few more months of great programming.
That's right.
Do we have time for another call, Chris?
Yeah, we do.
Okay, let's talk to Donna in Chicago on immigration. The immigration reform, of course, was introduced today by a bipartisan crew of 8 white male senators. Donna, what do you make of it?
Hey, Donna.
Hello?
Hi.
Yes. Thank you. What I want to digress a little bit because I have some reservations about this supposed immigration bill.
Please.
Okay. Because I think we need to look at all of the provisions because I question if they're going to increase the availability by companies of HB1 visas for workers. Because some of these companies are notorious for hiring and bringing over technology workers and because they work for a lot cheaper than the U.S. Technology workers. Because I've read articles, there really is not a shortage of technology workers in the U.S., but there is a shortage of U.S. technology workers who are willing to work for less when they have the experience and the knowledge.
Okay.
So I think we need to look at this bill carefully because there may be that kind of provision in there.
Well, that's a very good point. I thank you for the call. You know, I don't think you're ever going to see real immigration reform as long as it's cost effective for employers to exploit undocumented workers.
Yeah.
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 But, you know,
I totally agree.
Reverend Jim Wallace always says there's two signs on the border. One says keep out and one says help wanted. And, you know, if you ever got rid of all the illegal immigrants, you'd be paying $50 for a salad. And the fact is that it's the new slavery. You know, we just keep it secret.
Yeah.
So, you start locking up employers for hiring undocumented workers and you'll see it stop.
Yep.
But I don't know if that's going to happen beforehand.
I don't think so either.
Are you guys at all encouraged by the bill that was presented today?
Well, it's not a bill. I think it's just
an outline of proposals.
Yeah. Yes. It's an outline of proposals.
Sorry, it's an idea that might become a concept that might become a bill.
Exactly. Right.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's hard to get too excited about something like that, but we'll see what happens.
You can be hypothetically excited.
Yeah.
Do we have a second to play this John McCain bite? What he said about it this weekend?
John McCain was on a Sunday.
Yeah, let me cue that up real quick.
It's number 8. John McCain actually went on a Sunday morning talk show to say this.
We can't go on forever with 11 million people living in this country in the shadows and in illegal status.
And he would know because he lives in a state where, you know, like many other southwestern states, undocumented workers being exploited props up the whole economy.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. I used to live there. I lived in Arizona for 13 years.
You are so Arizona. I can so see that.
Yes, I guess I am.
Senator Dick Durbin had some comments to the same end on the idea that might become a plan, that might become a concept.
We are committed to a comprehensive approach to finally in this country have an immigration law that we can live with.
Now, we don't know if this is going to lead to real reform or not. All we do know is it gives Republicans and Democrats something new to fight about on the airwaves for the next week.
Yeah, I mean, it's an opening to a conversation. But it's interesting to me that we can't discount the fact the only reason why Republicans are coming to the table is because they lost the Hispanic vote so considerably in the last election.
You're right, Jackie. And you can't become president without 60% of the Latino vote. And, you know, let's not forget, who was the president who gave amnesty back in the 80s to all undocumented workers in the country?
Oh, yeah, Ronald Reagan. Yeah,
that would be again. Reagan. Indeed. So, you know, I don't really know
what was I smoking?
and you got to look at Barack Obama. Here's the guy who you know, sent National Guard troops to the border and who had the most deportations of any president, but he also supported the DREAM Act. And that's how Latino Americans knew this guy was on our side, even though he was enforcing the laws a lot more than Republicans ever did. And that's why he won. We'll be back for the final minutes of the Stephanie Miller Show right after this.
Finally, talk radio you can dance to. It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller.
Yes. Bring it back to the early 90s.
What's wrong? What are you signing for that? What's wrong with I've Got the Power?
Nothing. It's
CNC Music Factory, right? Oh, yes. Snap.
It's Snap.
Tengo la fuerza.
Oh,
this
you
song was used in the Fisher King.
That's wow.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Do you want to feel really old?
Yeah.
You know what happened?
Who doesn't?
Okay. The Challenger disaster happened 27 years ago today.
Indeed.
Wow.
Just the kid watching it in school.
Where were you?
I was at Universal Studios in the break room.
We were home on a snow day in Hampton, Virginia, and so we watched it on TV at home. It broke into my sister's soap opera, and she was very upset.
I was in school, and there was a TV in this common area where the kids could watch, and it's still very recent to me. When I was a kid, I got really into NASA because I got really into the Wright stuff, and I read Tom Wolfe's book, and so I was really, really involved in the shuttle movement as a kid. I was a total astronaut freak, and it was just so devastating. And largely forgotten, really, in the culture, along with the Columbia disaster as well.
Oh yeah,
people forget that like the first two shuttles were both tragically destroyed. Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, and all I remember
Apollo 1, where Grissom and Chaffee and
I wasn't.
That was
67.
Before my time. Yeah.
Apollo, that was Apollo. Yeah, with Grissom, Chaffee, and Gus Grissom, who was the second American in space.
Right.
Yeah.
And part of the problem was he'd, since his problem with the hatch on the Mercury, they made it very difficult to open the hatch on the Apollo capsule. It took about a minute, and they didn't have a minute. So that was one of the major changes they made.
It was horrible. So it's a good morning for discuss on NASA tragedies.
Yeah, good buddy, everybody.
Hey, I'd like to bring up something a little positive.
All right.
Because do you remember back in 2009 when President Obama was first sworn in and we heard about that secret GOP strategy session dinner at the caucus room?
Yes.
That's the D.C. restaurant, and all the big Republicans, Eric Cantor, Jim DeMint, John Kyle, Frank Luntz, and a weeble with plastic Fisher-Price hair named Gingrich all came. And they plotted how they would sabotage all of the president's new agenda. But this year, everyone was watching, so the gang that couldn't smear straight has not yet been able to schedule a new meeting. And so now some of the top D.C. restaurants are pitching the Republicans to have this year's all-you-can-obstruct dinner. Can I tell you some of the restaurant pitches?
Sure. Here we go.
Good. Let's get some music here. Well, Republicans, the DC TGI Fridays is so eager to book your right-wing strategy supper that for a limited time they're changing the name to Thank God It's Fridays, and by God we mean the One Nation Under God Who's the One True God, Not a Lie Who Is a False God Fridays. So go there. Or come to the Sizzler, Republicans, and try the new 32-ounce porterhouse steak. It's the slab of beef that's so manly it hates women as much as you do. If the GOP agrees to meet at the DC Denny's, then for one full month they pledge every time a senior orders the Grand Slam breakfast, Paul Ryan gets to pop out to their table and deny them Medicare. Or consider meeting at the Georgetown Chili's, where the jalapeno poppers are so deliciously undocumented, your digestive system will self-deport. And for all you Southern conservatives, all you patriots still defending the Confederate flag, that patriotic symbol of quitting America to start your own country so you can keep people as livestock, well, the Washington, D.C. soup plantation is willing to offer table service by actual plantation slaves. Don't worry, Republicans, they're happy slaves like the ones you like in Gone with the Wind, but make sure you bring your appetite unchained. And El Pollo Loco plans to appeal to the GOP with their new chili neo con carne. It'll unilaterally invade your stomach, and Republicans will like it because there's no exit strategy. And finally, Chick-fil-A really wants your business, Republicans. They plan to appeal to you simply by saying, hey, homophobes, welcome home. There you go, Republicans. So have your new strategy dinner and obstruct the cause of justice in this country.
Nicely done.
Thank you so much. It has been a great pleasure and joy sitting in and filling in for you guys. What do you think is going to be the big news story of the week as it unfolds? Will it be immigration, or do you think that it's going to be the ongoing budget battle?
Budget.
You think
yeah.
so?
Yeah. Yeah, because the immigration thing is just an outline of a sketch of a, you know, of an idea.
But it is positive, isn't it? Are you at all encouraged by the fact that, it's Republicans and Democrats coming together? I mean,
that actually may be too friendly. That may actually be the problem. There may not be enough of a news story in the fact that we're cooperating.
Yeah.
Well, that's a good point. I mean, but anytime I see, Marco Rubio and Chuck Schumer working in tandem together. Now, admittedly, this is John McCain and Lindsey Graham, who Republicans don't think are Republican enough, and they tend to try to act more evil than they are to be popular. But I still think that, look, they're calling it a tough but fair path to citizenship, and it'll hopefully bring the Dream Act into reality even more so, and stop punishing children who were brought here as children. Mm-hmm. I think that I'm hopeful that even if the Republicans are doing it for purely selfish reasons, a lot of people who just want to be part of the American dream and came to this country to pay into our system can start paying into our system and paying taxes and being part of a guest worker program.
I hope we can get down to that.
Well, the president's giving a speech tomorrow in Vegas, or at least some remarks tomorrow in Vegas on immigration, so I think that'll at least carry it through the next couple of news cycles.
I hope so.
And we'll see what happens from there.
I'd like to see something positive come of it.
Me too.
I do want to say that coming up this week on Viewpoint, we've got a lot of great stuff, so please be sure to watch me on Current if you still have the pleasure at 8 p.m. You are allowed to DVR us as well.
That's right.
We're having political comedian panels on every show, and I think we have Keith Ellison coming into the show this week as well as a bunch of
love
other
him.
Various
And one of his favorite songs is The Power by Snap.
Huh.
Really?
Seriously.
There you go.
Yeah.
How do you know these things?
Because he was on with us once, and I played it coming out of a break.
And he said, this is one of my favorite songs?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, brilliant. And we'll have Raoul Grove on to talk about the immigration reform idea that might become a bill, as well as I think Matt Taibbi is joining us in Rolling Stones.
Oh, Jets. I have a huge journalism crush on him.
Well, then watch Viewpoint and keep watching the Stephanie Show. Hopefully she'll be back tomorrow. Thanks for being so nice to me, guys. Have a great week.
Bye, John.
You too.